I feel like my screenshots always go to a new place. I feel so inept when it comes to screenshot locations.
I think you can change it. You can set it somewhere, somehow.
I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
I'm still a silly Windows user, so.
So you're used to things being non-intuitive.
I will say, when I first started using Macs here, you couldn't just like right-click and create new folder. And that's something they added later. Mm. It's a lot easier to create new folders than it used to be. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, there was a bit of a learning curve
back
in the day.
That was like the main thing I wanted. I was like, I just want to be able to easily create new folders by just... but yeah, it's much better than I feel like it used to be. But yeah.
Okay.
I'm good.
We're good?
I think so. We're recording.
I think we're good.
The red blinky thing is there.
Yeah, I'm just making sure we got everything in here. Yeah. Okay.
One of these days, I'm actually going to find like a black and white shirt that has like a bunch of crazy patterns on there so that when it goes to color, it's going to be like, it's still black and white.
Yes.
But not today.
Not today. Well, I guess you have the lights too. You know, we could make the lights white as well.
Oh, yeah. Like Pleasantville.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
130, is it 132, right?
Yes, sir.
132. I thought we already did 132. Maybe we did 131.
We definitely did 131.
We did 131? This week is 132?
I'm pretty sure. Now you've got me wondering.
Now I don't know. What was it? Just let me check. I trust you. Why am I misremembering? Let me double check real quick. Last week. 131. Okay, yeah. It's 132.
Whew.
My brain is not working.
Well, I remember every single one.
Just got that steel trap memory.
Oh, so clearly. Yeah.
Yes.
It's good that we don't remember them super well because we have new listeners and viewers. So
yes.
Then now we get to, if someone asks us a question we've already heard before, you know, sometimes we're going to be like, oh, yeah, that's new.
We don't
new.
Have to feign enthusiasm.
Right.
We genuinely don't remember talking about
it. It's new again.
That does happen.
It does.
All right. Welcome up for blah, 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 blah. Welcome everybody to episode number 132, we verified, of the Goulet Pencast, where fountain pens are still a thing. I'm Brian Goulet.
I'm Drew Brown.
And we're here from Goulet Pens to deliver this casual, informal, tangential, and extraneous, superfluous, and extemporaneous fountain pen show, where we talk about what's going on at the Goulet Pen Company and in our fountain pen lives. In today's show, we're going to be talking about Pilot's nib dating system.
I'm excited about that one.
Yes. It's exciting. Greasing up a Pelican piston that's gone stiff. Swapping out Pilot Kakuno nibs. We're going to talk about matte finish pens. Which pens that everyone else likes, but we don't. So that's fun. And we'll be spotlighting the relatively new Kaweco piston pen. So that should be a good time had by all. And we'll start it off with some feedback.
Feeding back to us inaugurally today here on episode 132 of the Goulet Pencast is Julia Royale says, Drew, the more you sound like you're quote-unquote making fun of Italian, the more right it sounds to the Italian ear. The bounce is a part of the language. It feels weird, but it's tried and true. We were talking about that Visconti Il Magnifico marble, and
yes.
I just felt bad trying to make it sound Italian, but I you know,
I think as long as you're doing it genuinely and not as like a caricature.
Yeah. And there was a couple people like that who said, you know, I think that other cultures would rather you just make an attempt, make an honest, you know, genuine attempt than Americanize it. That's probably more disrespectful. But like you said, as long as you're not intentionally mocking, you know, I get it's better to try and be ignorant than to be just kind of dismissive, I guess.
Makes sense.
I'll continue to try my best. Thank you, Julia.
Yeah.
And then an anonymous user said in response to our previous chats about fountain pen technology that RFID would be cool tech so that we can find them if lost.
Oh.
Now, I thought this was cool because...
Like an Apple tag sort of situation.
So
now that is interesting.
Right?
That is actually a use case for like a, not all pens, but like a really nice pen. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, we spent a considerable amount of time talking about tech incorporated into fountain pens, and mostly we kind of landed on the fact that it's just not necessary.
Yeah.
But when I saw this comment, I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe, because this doesn't interrupt the actual writing process in any way.
Yeah.
It just makes it a little bit safer for you to, you know.
Hopefully not, yeah.
I don't know
how you'd incorporate that.
And it would deter theft and things like that. So, well, I mean, no doubt that these air tags are going to get smaller and smaller as time goes on. So eventually you'll be able to fit one in your pen, even if you just kind of shove it in there. So who knows?
That's interesting. That is an interesting use case.
Thank you for that. Genuine Seer says, when I write cards for people, I cut a piece of Tomoe River paper and I write my message on that. I glue the paper into the card. That way the paper is consistent. And if someone makes a mistake while writing the message in the card, you can just cut out another piece of paper. That definitely works. And that way you don't need to worry.
Making your own card a little bit.
Yeah, that way you don't need to worry about the quality of the actual greeting card paper. Now, unfortunately, Genuine Seer, this still does not fix my problem about going to a kid's birthday party and buying a card from Target on the way to the birthday party, because I'm not going to have scissors and Tomoe River and glue handy in the car. So
let's keep some in your glove compartment or something.
That's what would need to happen.
It requires a lot of planning and foresight for a lack of planning and foresight.
That's my problem. I like pens. That's an odd name for a pen enthusiast. Says, on the topic of greeting cards, if you happen to have a Trader Joe's near you, the cards are very affordable there and super fountain pen friendly.
Interesting.
Well, thank you. I like pens. And guess what? I do too, like fountain pens. Trader Joe's, apparently, place to go for fountain pen friendly greeting cards.
I've never bought a trading card.
Trading Joe's card.
I've never bought a card from Trader Joe's, so I'll have to try that out.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Lucy Lou Metzel says, so glad you are not trying to break any records. The record was PenCast 69 with a duration of 2 hours and 43 minutes. PenCast 130 was 2 hours and 41 minutes. And now PenCast 131 holds the new duration length record with 2 hours 47 minutes. Congrats. I don't know what happened, man.
It was pretty ironic that you did state at the beginning of the PenCast, we're not trying to break any records today.
It's like, I was like a precog. I was just like, could tell that we were going to, and it wasn't even like, we didn't even that much planned like to really go that long. I don't know. We're going to be shorter today. So I'm making a commitment to that. I'm going to keep an eye on the clock. Not real. I've got stuff to do. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know. Watch this break the record. Maybe if I say that it will break the record, it'll have reverse psychology.
There you
go. And we'll
actually
be quicker. Let's try that this time.
This is going to be a long one.
We're going for a record breaker. I just won't tell you what record. Okay. Penguin 1780 says, the Manami Olika is a wick pen. The company is Korean. Okay, cool. The pen itself may be made in China. It's the same model as the Uli Splendid pen, which I found in my local grocery store. The cartridges are 3.4 millimeters. It was my work pen for a bit because it could handle carbon paper. Okay.
A fountain pen that can handle carbon is interesting.
Okay. I mean,
so this was one of Brian's personal collection pens that I brought out and had him kind of explain during the last episode. And neither of us were certain as to what...
it's like a platinum preppy-esque kind of a pen. Yeah.
So, yeah, it sounds like it's more like the Pilot Petite or something like that. You know, one with a wick.
Yeah.
Or a Varsity even.
Yeah. Yeah.
But apparently this brand is a very popular stationery brand in South Korea.
That's what Michelle Higgins said. Manami is a super famous Korean stationery company, literally. I have lots of Manami gel pens for coloring, but haven't seen their fountain pen. It makes sense. They'd make something as they're huge. Korea has great stationery. Well, there you go.
Nice to know.
But apparently maybe it's made in China and it's not Korean. I don't know. I don't know much about this company. It's not something that I've seen a lot in the U.S. here.
First time I saw it was last week.
Yeah. So there you go. Now you guys know. All right. Bizeps. I wasn't sure about buying a Pilot Vanishing Point because of the clip position, so I got a Moonman A1 to test it. As that felt good, I bought a Decimo, and I'm really happy with it. For that purpose, I was thankful that the A1 existed as a cheap way to get an impression of the feeling of these kinds of pens. So there you go. There's kind of a use case for a knockoffish pen would be to test out the whatever.
And this person wasn't actually the only one who wrote in with something like that. It sounds like it's not uncommon for people to buy a super affordably, heavily inspired by pen and kind of use that to find out, do I want to go ahead and take the plunge on the real deal?
I think for certain things you could do that, but you know, it's not the actual pen that you're getting. So like depending on what it is you're trying to evaluate.
Like the clip positioning makes sense.
Clip positioning, because you can like see visibly one or the other and kind of compare
and you can
them.
Feel it rather than like the writing experience isn't like a one-to-one comparison.
Yeah, the writing experience I would not, because it's going to be totally different.
Yeah. But you can
even
say
like the weight balance and stuff like that is, you know, it could be hit or miss.
But you can find out, does the clip down here bother me or not? That's a pretty one-to-one.
Yeah, I would say so. So that's an interesting use case. I've not written with that pen myself, but I think I've seen it. Have held it maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Our team has it. Yeah. Anyway, cool. All right. Well, that's all I got for feedback this week. Let's talk about some new stuff. All right. I will kick it off here. We have the Kaweco Piston Sport Steel Nib Units. I know everybody's been waiting for that. Basically, it uses a slightly different nib setup. We'll get into more of that later in this episode. But the nib itself is the same as the other Kawecos, but if you want to swap the nibs out, it's a little more complicated. So they just had this one as a whole separate screw-in unit, which is actually kind of nice because the other Kawecos don't have that.
Yeah, so we didn't have this available when the Piston Sports launched, but we have them now.
Yeah. Extra fine, medium broad, and double broad, apparently.
BB.
So if you wanted to extend the range of the use of this specific pen, you can now do that for $17. So go check that out if you're interested. We have the Twisby Eco. They got another color coming out with bronze trim, which I dig that trim. This is Cafe. So this is like a basically darker version of the cream that we already have, which looks really good. They both look really good.
With cooler trim too.
Yes, it is really cool. So yeah, this is going to be a little bit more. It's going to be the same price as the other $50 basically for the other Ecos that have bronze trim. Bronze trim is more complicated to do and more expensive. So that's why it's that way. But anyway, nice color. And it seems like the coffee color thing is like really kind of in right now. Or has been for a little bit. So I know Drew's loving that because it's brown.
It just has good vibes.
It does have good vibes, doesn't it? And then the last one I have to talk about is actually two pens. These are both Benu Talisman. Talisman, or like that, how I pluralized it. Talismans. We have a Frankincense and a Lily of the Incas. So there's, you know, a little bit of backstory to each of these. The Talismans, they always incorporate some kind of like charm or, you know, not mythical, but some sort of
sometimes mythical
story. Yeah, sometimes mythical, but some kind of physical thing that is incorporated into a story of some kind of culture.
Yeah, like like the lucky four-leaf clover or the mandrake root or something like that.
Yeah,
stuff that is real but has mythical properties associated with it.
Yeah,
sometimes. Real properties and like some considered some things to be healing or not whatnot.
Sure,
but like,
sure. But there's always some like cultural significance to each.
And they put
things.
The stuff in them.
Yes.
So like mandrake has mandrake in it. Edelweiss has edelweiss in it.
Yeah, and frankincense has frankincense in it. The frankincense is a yellow and brown base, so I think it looks like a banana smoothie sort of thing. And it's got some holographic sparkles in it, which look pretty rad. So frankincense has been used in the Middle East and Asia from biblical times for religious, spiritual, and magical purposes. I've definitely smelled some frankincense in my life because I'm Catholic, and that's a Catholic thing to use a lot of frankincense. And then we have Lily of the Incas, which is pink and black resin base with holographic sparkles. So this is also known as Alstroemeria.
If
I said that correctly.
That was better than my first
try. I have no idea if I said that correctly, but we'll try that out. This originates in South America, where it is venerated as a divine gift bestowed by the god of the sun. So there you go. This one is pretty cool. I'm going to be honest. Yellow and brown, not necessarily my like go-to color scheme personally, but the pink and black looks pretty rad. So yeah. You can check both of those out. The talisman is kind of an interesting shape. It's got lots of stuff going on with it.
Yeah, I guess you could call them facets, but they're really unique facets.
They're like scoops.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Like intermittent.
I don't know what the
soft facets.
I don't know what to call them because they kind of look unique. They look like their own thing. But anyway,
scoopsits
fits the unique nature of each of these pens. So anyway, you can check those out. Number 6 nibs on those, $162 for the Talas people. All right, Drew, what do you got?
Stickers.
Ooh.
We've got some new stickers, Brian.
Stickers. All right.
So our friend Mary designed us some dragon stickers, one with the Lamy 2000-ish pen called the Grail Dragon and another Lamy Horde Dragon or Pen Horde Dragon. People loved them so much, we asked Mary, can we have some more dragons, please? Mm-hmm. And she delivered. Now we have one dragon who is a tea dragon soaking in a nice warm cup of Earl Grey with the Earl Grey Benu Euphoria with them. So that is delightful and lovely and cute and just magical. And then coffee cannot be paired without its friend. I'm sorry, tea. Yeah, coffee tea. We've got a coffee dragon as well. And again, dragon enjoying themselves with a nice latte paired with the Benu Ice Caramel Latte fountain pen. And we can actually say that these are those pens because we helped design those. So
yes.
Those are those pens. So if you like the dragons, if you like coffee or tea, or happen to be a proud owner of the Earl Grey or Ice Caramel Latte Euphoria, these stickers are literally for you. So that's why we did them. So those can be picked up now for $4, and they are slightly holographic. It is known as a vaporwave style, so it's not like holographic in your face rainbowy, but it does have a nice sheen to it that looks really cool. Yeah. So
it's hard to capture in images what that does, but they're pretty cool.
Yeah. So check those out now. We'll have some pictures for you. We've also got a couple new pens. Now, Waldman came out with two pens, and we did mention them briefly a couple weeks ago because we thought they were launching. They did not launch, so I'll mention them briefly now. We've got a Tuscany, which is coming in chocolate and rose gold for $440. And we've got another one, the Commander 23, which is a blue and silver pen, arriving for $544. So those are both gold nibs, beautifully imprinted gold nibs, I should say.
Yeah.
Waldman does a really great job in their nibs. I believe both of them are two-tone nibs as well, which is not something you see very often anymore. It used to be more common,
I think. Rarer and rarer these days.
Yes. Yeah. So those are available
sharp
now.
Very sharp-looking pens. They're heavy, too.
They're very heavy, shiny.
Stout.
You get one of these in your hands, you're not going to feel like you didn't get the bang for your buck because they are substantial and you feel it.
Yeah.
So those are available now. Waldman Tuscany, Waldman Commander 23. Also, what perhaps may be available is a new Diplomat Arrow. This one is oxide brass, and it is a traditional Diplomat Arrow design with those flutes that go along the exterior of the cap and the barrel, but it's one of those ones that has kind of a two-tone effect. So you've got a kind of a, you know, brass color, outer color, and then within those grooves is like a darker black. So they have the, you know, it is a, it's a bronze, a raw bronze pen that they then coat in black, but then they kind of sand away the black part, leaving black only in those grooves. So it's very cool.
It's like an antique kind of look. Yeah.
It looks really cool. So that is a little bit more than your average Arrow because it is brass, and it will be a little bit heavier than your average Arrow as well. So these are going to be sold for $236. So if you want, if speaking of substantial, like these are also going to be hefty pens.
Yeah, they're 41 grams is the overall weight. It's getting up there.
I don't know my grams. I don't have like a mental database of grams in pens.
Like, I know like the heaviest pens that we've ever carried are like pushing 60 grams.
Okay.
That's like very, very heavy.
I would have no idea like how much a Safari would be. No clue.
Safari, I want to say, is 17 grams.
Okay. Well, that is...
Metropolitan is 26 grams.
I just
looked that up today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the Explorer is... very low. It's 12 grams, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's nothing.
So, you know, it's helpful if you have a pen that you like are very familiar with the weight, and then you just look up the grams of that, and then you can sort of get a baseline.
Yeah. But we measure and weigh all of the pens on our website, so if you happen to have a pen that we sell, check it out, and you can have somewhat of an idea of how many it would take to equal one Diplomat Arrow Oxide.
Yeah. There you go. I feel like 20 to 25 grams is like...
considered
pretty
hefty.
Decent average, like solid but not heavy.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of a thing. You know, if you get above 30, then you're like, that's that's pretty substantial. Some people may choose not to post their pens at
that
point.
That's the beef zone.
Yeah, yeah. And that's full. That's with the cap and everything mm-hmm. involved. So, of course, if you don't write with the cap, this is why we do weights for both the cap, the body, and then the whole pen, is because that does matter whether you post it or not. So there you go. All kinds of fun information that you can have at your fingertips. Okay.
That's it for new stuff.
All right. We got a couple of quick company updates and then Q&A. All right. Well, we got a new video from me this week. Brian's top blue pens video. Started out as top five, then grew to 10, and then I had some honorable mentions. And, you know, I don't even know why we set numbers for me for these types of videos, but I do love me some blue pens. I was going to say, if there's any video that I would not be able to contain myself, it would be a blue pen
video. Did you discover any new blue favorites during this escapade?
I mean, I'm familiar with all of the all of the favorites.
Did you see a blue pen that you felt like you might have been sleeping on a little bit?
There were some ones that I definitely haven't thought about quite as much, especially like limited editions and stuff like that. If there's, you know, there's a bunch of like Sailors that kind of came out maybe in a batch with mm-hmm. something else, that then just looking at it kind of on its own, I was like, oh yeah, that is really nice. Yeah.
Very cool.
But there's a lot of them. I think we have 161 blue pens on our site. I believe that's the count when I looked it up. So that's a fair number of blue pens.
It is.
But I'm not complaining. And then Drew's got a What's New video that he will have gotten out this week. Yep, that is happening. We had our a company party.
Yeah.
Our company.
A little annual shindig.
Yeah, we had it at a Brazilian steakhouse. We called it our company meeting, M-E-A-T-I-N-G, or at least that's what I called it. And I kept calling it that a lot. So I can say we because I was trying to make fetch happen with that one.
I think it was generally accepted.
I think so.
Yeah.
It was not the most offended reaction dad joke kind of thing.
It was not.
We've had. So I'll call that a win.
It's definitely not.
If I can get a mix of groans and laughs, that's good. As long as it balances out.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe slightly more laughs than groans.
No, that was not too groany at all.
Okay. Good stuff. So yeah, that's what we've had going on. Let's get into the Q&A.
Okay. We're going to start things off with a heavy one.
We're just going right into it here.
Yeah, this is from Tony. Mm. And Tony says that there is very little text info on the internet explaining the date codes on Pilot Gold nibs.
Mm.
And there is no info on YouTube. The date code is prominent.
Not for long.
The date code is prominent on his E95S. P1022 on that particular pen. And then he believes that the nib, that means that it was manufactured in the month of October 2022. 10-22. I have read that P is the control symbol, but I don't know what that actually means in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. How about a deep or semi-deep dive on Pilot nib date codes? Now, I did not know that this was a thing before this question came in.
Nor did I.
And then I checked all my pilots and it all made sense.
Mm.
Like all the dates seemed reasonable, approximately, you know, to where I when and where I would have gotten them. Mm. And I was shocked. And I did, you know, reach out to our distributor just to check. I'm like, hey, these are legit, right? And she's like, yeah, that's true. So now I don't know what the P is. So maybe you can dig in on that.
I can dig in a little bit. Yeah. Now I will say there was a bit of a rabbit hole, but it kind of became like, I don't know the right metaphor to go with, but I could tell that there was more there, but there was like nothing for me to grab onto.
Yeah, that's what Tony says.
And you know, it was to the point where it's like, okay, I could like reach out to some like deeper sources that we have within Pilot and try and get some clarity on this. But I was also like, I don't know if anybody like actually cares about this because I'll explain what I understand is going on here. But when you go back to like the vintage stuff, that's where it becomes much less clear as to exactly what everything meant.
Did you check your vintage VP?
I didn't. Okay. No, I didn't get to pull a lot of my.
We don't know when that one's from.
Like that. No, but I can pull it up.
Yeah,
I can go inspect it. But so let's explain what the heck we're even talking about here. So every Pilot nib apparently has a stamping with some kind of code on it.
The gold nib ones.
The gold nib ones, yeah. Not the steel, I would imagine. But the gold nib ones do. So it has usually a letter, a single letter, and then a series of numbers, like three or four numbers. That seems to be the way that all the codes sort of worked. Not sure exactly how far back that goes in pilots history, but we're talking many, many decades at least. So pretty much anybody buying any recent pilot is going to see some numbers on their nibs. Do you know if they're always in the same spot or does it depend? It's like kind of down below the stamping, right?
I don't know.
Like
I honestly, the ones I looked at were the larger nib bends and they were all right there on the face. But yeah, like a vanishing point, I don't know where those would be.
Yeah. And I think like ones like the E95S and the Elite and stuff like that, I think they're actually like under the inlaid portion. So you may not be able to see them without getting them out somehow.
Tony says it was prominent.
Prominent on the E95S?
Yeah, okay. That's what he says in the comment here.
Okay, there was somebody else that I was reading about that had an inlaid nib of some kind. Maybe it was the Sterling. I don't know. Anyway, so the... let's see here. I'll try and give as much context around the history, but again, this is like kind of just based on my internet research and using some of my common sense. So this is not like ultra verified, but if y'all are just like, this is so interesting, give me more, I can go and try and find more. But I didn't want to do that because especially like the timeliness of it, it was probably going to take me a while to get some answers back and forth. So
this can be a communal effort. Little,
yeah. It's like a little movie trailer here. So it can get a bit complex if you go back far enough. It seems today at least that all the nibs are made in one factory in Hiratsuka, and it's been that way since 1979 when the Tokyo factory was closed. But Hiratsuka was older than that. They were around for then. But I believe that the letter designation, at least in the past, designated which factory that the nib was made in. So let me talk about that a little bit more. So if you have pens from the 1970s and earlier, the nib designations can get a little more complex, probably too much to explain here in full, especially because I had less and less information about that the further back I went. But I did find there was one thread on Fountain Pen Network in particular that was helpful and had a link to a site that had a little bit of dates of the pilot factory closings and openings that you could sort of piece some things together.
So were there like multiple factories back then that made it confusing?
Yes. So back in the day, there might have been an H designation as the letter portion of it. And that stood for Hiratsuka.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also apparently there's some that had an A or a B instead of the H. So I guess there were like different production lines that were happening at Hiratsuka.
Oh.
So depending on which production line
it would be
off
like
of,
HA or HB?
I think it might just be A or B.
Oh, okay.
Not the H.
Okay.
I think, but I'm not, you know, I haven't like seen a ton of these, so I'm not 100% sure. So it's not really clear when they started or stopped those ones. And this kind of thing, like Pilot has, you know, some designations like this that are just like basically inside baseball. Like they just put it out. Like they have on some of their like higher end pens, like Emperors and stuff. If you look on the clips, they have some like random numbers.
That's right.
That you could almost be like, is that a serial number?
I remember we asked about that one.
Yeah.
Time.
They're like, no, it's literally like an internal number they use for like quality control or something like that. They're like, it's not meant to mean anything to the end customer. So I'm pretty sure that's where we're at with these two, but I guess, you know, if it's got a date on it, that's a little more like kind of meaningful.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's kind of, it tells a little story, especially if you buy your pen secondhand.
Yeah.
Like if you buy a custom 74, it, you know, secondhand, it could have been from, you know, now or, you know, 20 years ago. You really have no idea.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool.
That is kind of a helpful little thing. Yeah. So it seems like that's kind of like the practical use case for this, which factory it's made in and all that stuff. I don't think it really matters at this point, especially because their QC is really good. So kind of won't leave the pilot factory if it's not going to be to their standard. So some of the letters might have a T on there, which stood for Tokyo. They had a Tokyo factory, which closed in 1979.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I believe that factory had a different name because like the whatever province or whatever that it was in changed names or something like that. I don't know. This was not the most verifiable thing, but we're talking like 40s, 50s, 60s into the 70s. So it's going back a little ways in pilot history. So going to today, it you know, if it's got a P designation. Basically, I found that it's unclear what the P means.
Dang it.
So
pilot?
I don't know. Maybe. But I think they all have P's from what I understand these days. Maybe that's not the case. I don't know. Maybe I want to check out your pens and see what's going on. But I could see P being just some internal designation of some kind that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I don't know if there's any letters besides P. It feels like if there's a P on all of them, then the P maybe doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But who knows? So I wasn't able to get solid information about that. But again, I think the letter, it's like kind of a novelty, but it really doesn't matter as much. I think the date is the most interesting part.
So. Which I think is fascinating because it's, A, I don't know how I didn't know this after, you know, a decade plus of having these pens.
Yeah, I never thought to look it up.
Because it's the only pen that has extra numbers on them. The only nib that has, like, they all say, like, sometimes some say, like, the type of gold, obviously. And there might be a random symbol that's proprietary to that brand. But these are, like, intentional numbers. And I've never thought to ask.
I know. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Me too. I never.
So.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah, we've gone well over a decade here.
And never, so
I literally never even noticed it, really.
I know. It's like so, right under our noses. It's so cool to like still be learning and still be discovering fun things. So I immediately went through all my pilots and like found out when they were from.
Nice.
So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I've got some vintage ones that I should probably look up and do that. I just haven't done that yet. But very interesting. So and I believe that sometimes there's three numbers and sometimes there's four.
Hmm.
You know, if you think about like if it's say it was made in March.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it might be a three. It might be an 03. It's hard to say. So I think basically the last two digits should be the year.
Yeah.
And then whether it's one or two digits before those, that would designate the month. So it should be 01 up through 12. And then it gives you the month. So that's about all I have. It's not a super deep dive, but that's as deep as I was able to go.
Well, another reason I think it was cool to add this one was because if you and I were totally aware of this, odds are there were a bunch of other people that were also unaware of this.
I'm sure.
So
otherwise, you would find more about it online.
Yeah.
So
I would say go. If you have a pilot nearby with a gold nib, check out the date and be amazed at the birthday of your pen. You can, you know, choose a day in the month and celebrate. Give it a little cupcake.
Yeah. I will say, I am curious, you know, because we, you know, we sell new pens. I'm curious, like, if a pen is made, like if a nib is made, how long does it take to go from raw nib manufacture to being put on a pen to being to a distributor to then a retailer to then the end customer? I mean, it could be months, I would imagine.
You check with Mike and Trevor, and as soon as we get some in, pop them open and check those codes.
It's kind of curious. Yeah, exactly. What are the dates on some of those? So I don't know. It's kind of curious. But, you know, for that reason, you may not have a nib designation that's like the time you bought it exactly. It's probably going to be a several month delay there. But yeah, interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
That's what I got. Thanks for including that in there. Thanks for asking the question. Learn something new every day. All right. I got a question from Julian Gunther. Says, speaking of Pelican, my M800's filling mechanism used to go very smoothly just up until last week when it suddenly got a lot harder to fill the pen. I don't know what happened. I hadn't done anything fancy, just tried out a bunch of different inks lately. My retailer contacted Pelican and said that this sort of thing can happen and that there's nothing to do about it apart from buying a new rear section, which costs around 200 euros at the moment. I'm Austrian. Now, my question is that so? Or do you guys have any ideas what could be wrong with my beloved pen and what I could do to get it back on track that doesn't cost me 200 bugs?
Bugs.
That's what it says. I like that. I like that better than bucks.
I wonder if...
I think I'm going to start saying bugs.
I wonder if maybe, like, does the euro symbol look like a bug?
It does.
It does kind of...
Like, it kind of looks like a bug. Yeah. Like
it has some legs on it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Is that a term? Is that a term
euro people, let me know.
Yeah.
So, A, that sucks. I'm sorry. Like, if it's your favorite pen and it just all of a sudden stopped working well, a piston unit inside of a fountain pen could definitely start hanging up on you after a long, long period of use, but it's more likely going to be a gradual thing. The fact that this happened suddenly is a little weird. So I'm guessing that if you were flushing and rinsing and flushing and rinsing a lot during this, you said you were trying out a bunch of inks lately, that perhaps just the repeated use of perhaps a cleaning agent might have just kind of gotten things a little dry in there and, you know, pulled out some of the lubrication and on the piston seal gasket. It's unlikely that the actual piston rod, the threaded assembly, is the thing hanging up on you, because I just can't imagine how that would just all of a sudden happen like that. So my guess is that the fact that, and thank you for mentioning the fact that you were trying a bunch of inks recently, that I think is the key here. Okay. My guess is that the gasket attached to the rod is the thing that is now missing some lubrication. So if that's the case, we're in good shape, because, and then, you know, this is, you could email this to customer care and they could help you out, but this is probably a common enough thing I thought it'd be worth chatting about here. And this can be done with the Lamy 2000 as well, or any pen that you can take the nib unit off and can't take off the piston assembly. So Pelican, Lamy 2000, a couple others like that, the Pilot Custom Heritage 92. So really all it takes is for you to pull off the nib section, which the nib housing feed assembly, which is easy to do on the Pelicans. They just unscrew. The nib doesn't need to come off of the feed or anything. Just unscrew it from the, as back as you can get. Yeah. Don't try to unscrew it from like where the wings of the nib or the shoulders of the nib are. You know, go
grab
as
grab it at the base.
Yeah, grab it at the base and turn it. But it'll come right out.
It's that way for every M200 on up through M1000.
Yep.
So all the Pelicans are like that.
That's right. Super easy, super convenient. And that'll actually give you a straight wide shot to the internal reservoir of the pen. So all you would need to do, get some good silicone grease like the one that we sell on our site, as long as it's not, you know, bearing grease or any weird stuff. The stuff we sell on our site is safe, and I would recommend that because it's what we know. Put some of that on a toothpick and just pull the piston all the way up, get it, you know, as far back as it can go, and just take that silicone grease and, you know, kind of push it, you know, around the interior of the reservoir. It doesn't need to be evenly distributed, and just move the piston up and down. That will actually do the distribution for you. And do that a couple times, and you should immediately feel a result, like in seconds. And if you don't, just add a little bit more. But you can be you know, conservative with it at first. You don't want to add too much, because then it gets all gunky and it can clump up at the base, and you don't want to impede your ink flow. So, you know, that's why we say a toothpick, because it's, you know, you can't get too much on there, and it can usually reach wherever you need it to reach. So that should take care of business. We've had a bunch of 2000s that we've had that issue with, and it's fixed them 99% of the time. The only reason your actual piston rod would be the problem is if somehow ink is getting up in there, or a cleaning agent is getting up in there and then somehow removing the lubrication from that. But if that was happening, it would probably be coming out of the knob and you'd know it. So I'm guessing that's not the case. If that is the case, then that, yeah, that is a little bit more complicated. If the rod itself is losing its lube, then, yeah, it's a Pelican, so those are hard to disassemble, and you do void your warranty there. So let's hope that it's just the gasket, because the gasket we can fix. We can take care of that.
Yeah.
It's an easy fix, and, you know, the cost of the silicone grease is going to be far less than 200 bugs.
Yes.
So there's that. And, again, this will work just fine with the Lamy 2000 as well as the Pilot Custom Heritage 92.
Yeah, I have a little bonus addition to this.
Please.
Which I actually didn't even remember until we sat down and started talking. It is true that most of the Pelican pens, you cannot remove the piston mechanism, but you actually can on the M800 and M1000, I believe.
Because those have metal.
They have metal threads on the back. And actually, if you have a Twisby wrench, it is the same 8mm size as the Twisby's. So you can actually use a Twisby wrench or some other tool that's similar to that. And you can unscrew the piston mechanism out of your M800. You know, you'll just have to reassemble it. You can, if you pull it out with the piston kind of like up all the way, then you're not likely to have pieces like fall out and stuff like that. It should come out as one housing unit or was one unit. And then if you want, you can use, you know, a swab to clean the inside of the barrel if you want. You can grease up, you know, I think there's a double seal on those. So you can grease up in between, you know, the points of pressure where the gasket would be, you know, rubbing up against the walls. And you could grease up the threads on the rod too if you wanted. So that is the way that I would go for the M800. Specifically, but I mean, if you want the lowest effort way, doing it like Drew mentioned is definitely easy and will last. You might have to do that a little more often because, you know, you're going to get the grease on essentially the inside walls of the pen. And then eventually by moving it back and forth, it's going to kind of like push all that down and it's not going to be there anymore. But you can always like reapply and swab it out and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it is a pretty sustainable way to keep it greased. But if you do it where you actually disassemble the thing and then grease it itself, it should last longer, like a while. So yeah.
But if you don't feel comfortable taking it apart, you know,
yeah.
just
then
you,
don't.
Yeah, yeah. Do whatever you feel the most comfortable with.
But it sounds like if you have the pen for a while, maybe it's not under warranty kind of thing anymore. And, you know, retailer, and, you know, this wasn't us, but you know, it sounds like if the other option is to buy a new one, like what do you have to lose? You know, might as well take it apart and try it. I doubt you're going to take it apart so bad that it's going to be like tossable. You know, you won't be able to reassemble it. But yeah, that's what I would try.
Yeah, both work.
Cool.
All right. Question number three comes to us from Tasin XD2114.
There you go.
We need to know, is the Kakuno's nib changeable? Brian?
Yes.
All right. Question four. No.
I don't have a lot to elaborate here.
Well,
it is, yeah.
It is, and it is a common question we get asked. So I went ahead and threw this in there because it's a common nib, it's a common pen, and its contemporaries are also common. So
It's also, I think, maybe the most affordable Pilot stainless steel nib you can get on a pen.
In the U.S. Because so, there was the Plumix, which...
Right. That was a little cheaper.
Yeah. No longer available in the U.S., I don't think.
Yeah.
And then there was the Pluminix as well, which is even cheaper and smaller.
A shorter Plumix. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But either way, you're not talking a huge investment for these pens.
No. And so those were super limited in nib sizes.
They were only stubs. Yeah. So, I mean, which, you know, that's something. But yeah, basically it's the same stainless steel nibs as you have on the Metropolitan, the Explorer, the Prera, other things too, probably. I'm sure the Knight, if you remember that back in the day.
Does it really?
The Pilot Knight. Yeah.
Same nib?
Same nibs. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They've had the same stainless steel nib for a long time. The only ones that are different I know is on the Parallel. And then like the Petite one, that one's got a different one. The Varsity's got a different one. But yeah, all the main, you know, stainless steel nib Pilots that you can get today uses that same nib as the Kakuno. So it's not a nib unit like we were just talking about on the Pelicans or like you have on the Kaweco piston. So it's not all one thing. You know, it's basically, it's the housing is fixed inside the grip of the pen. So if you pull it out, you're going to pull out the nib and the feed just on their own. But I mean, Pilot's really intentional about that. The nib really kind of sets in a very specific spot, which is actually super convenient and makes it really easy to install, especially because as you go to install it, the nib and the feed aren't like moving around on each other. So it makes it super easy to kind of pull it out and stick it back in on another pen. So yeah, that's what I could recommend. So you can, I was going to say like the reason it's so great for the Kakuno is because it's a very inexpensive pen. So if you had a more expensive one, like say you had a Prera or something and you wanted a different nib size or you dropped and damaged the nib, you could actually get a Kakuno and sacrifice the pen and just yank the nib out of there and put that back on your Prera. So, the cost of a new Kakuno is less than you would get from most spare nibs alone from other brands.
Less than $15.
So cool. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Or if you just like the faces that come on those Kakunos and you think they're fun and you want to put it on a different pen, you can totally just do that and swap them out and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's really easy to do. They're just friction fit. Grab them. It's kind of hard. I mean, the nibs are pretty solid, so
they are
kind of hard to screw up the nib.
It's kind of the best pen to remove the nib and feed from.
Yeah.
And you don't need to reinsert the nib and the feed in any particular orientation.
Yeah.
It does not matter. You can, it's spin
just around,
freely.
Yeah. Yep. That's not the case with all pens, especially other ones that have a housing. Like a lot of the Yovo nibs, they have to go in a certain way. Lamy has to go in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But Pilot's just whatever. You can just fit it in there however you want.
So if you ever were curious about like removing nibs and feeds, start with a Pilot steel nib. You really can't mess those up. They're great.
Yeah. Do you know off the top of your head? I genuinely couldn't remember this. The Kakuno does not have like a triangular grip, right?
It's
got a little bit of a flare to it.
Yeah. They're not like
And there's not like any clip or anything to worry about. The only thing is like alignment, I'm thinking. That's just when you go to realign it back into the pen, that may be the only thing you need to cross your mind, because it's like faceted. If you want the nib to line up with one of the facets,
sure,
you know, that's how they come. So you may choose to do it that way. But most other pens, especially if it's like a pen where it like screws, like the cap screws onto the back and it's got a clip, you may want that to line up specifically with a nib. And so you may be more particular about that. But I'm thinking most of the Pilot pens, it's not, it doesn't really have to align.
No, but you can put it wherever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. So
very versatile.
Pretty easy. Cool.
All right.
Next question. This is from Samantha. I've realized that I have a strong tactile preference for pens that have a matte texture rather than a polished one, especially in the grip section. However, shopping online for them isn't always easy, since texture is hard to read in photos and not every matte pen is advertised as such. The Charcoal Safari doesn't even show up in a search for matte on GouletPens.com, and it's frustratingly hard to tell which Safaris are matte and which aren't. What are your favorite matte or matte adjacent pens? And is there any possibility of adding texture as part of item descriptions or search parameters to make them easier to find? And can you think of a way to rough up a pen's surface to make it more grippable, even if it voids the warranty? So, boy, we got a lot of things to talk about on this
Samantha,
one,
Samantha.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted, I really hope
clearly that, knows her Matt.
Yeah, Samantha
stuff.
Samantha and Matt,
mm-hmm,
together forever.
That's right.
All right. So, as far as some of my personal most notable matte pens, and I'm talking about the whole pen for now. Obviously, the Black Matte Vanishing Point comes to mind, as well as the VPLS. And there was also a matte blue. All three of those Vanishing Points look great. Mm. Obviously, the Lamy 2000 in, you know, black polycarbonate is very matte all the way through. It does have a steel grip section, but I usually grip it a little bit further back from that, so I touch the matte part. That's very tactile. Feels very, very secure. There's a Black Mac Pilot Explorer that's very matte. And then there's an Opus 88 Jazz in Holiday, which almost slipped past me because I just don't think of it as matte, but it actually is. It is not a shiny pen. It does have a bit of a kind of a sandblasted look to it. It's a demonstrator, but like a frosted demonstrator. And then the Platinum Curados, the matte versions of those are some of the most like tactile-y matte pens we sell.
Yeah, they almost feel like rubber.
They're almost rubbery, yeah. Like, they are super matte. There's nothing glossy about those pens. They do have the demonstrator Curados's that are shiny, but the matte ones are super matte, like Matthew almost. And then we've got a Schaefer Matte Green and a Matte Black 300 as well. Those are a little bit more shiny, not as rough, but still, they're not glossy. And then we've got a Schon Design Pocket 6 in matte black. And there are a lot of metal pens. And I don't know if you would agree with this, Brian, that like a lot of the Arrows or All Stars or All Sports, they're metal. I don't know if I'd call them matte, but they're not glossy either.
It would be matte adjacent, I believe.
Yeah, matte adjacent. Yeah. So you might want to look at any sort of anodized pen you might think is on the matte side. You know, I think of like the Kaweco All Sports. Those are metal, but not like a slick metal. They've got a nice texture to them. So
and this is where like it is difficult, and part of why we don't have this as a designation on our site is because who's to say what's matte and what's glossy? There is obviously some delineation point, but if it's like sort of in between, that's where it gets kind of tough. And I feel like a lot of pens do fall into that range.
Yeah, because it's like any other sense, like, you know, smell or sight. It's like it's subjective. So, you know, you kind of just got to feel it for yourself. But hey, that's why you're asking. That's why we're here. So we're going to cover some more for you. SD DuPont has a few matte pens as well. Those might fly under your radar, but they're there. And then as far as grip goes, because Samantha did say that that's the most important part for her here, the Charcoal Safari does, in fact, have a matte grip. We mentioned that, and there are some other matte Safaris as well that have that. But yeah, to answer your question, the Safari and Charcoal does have it. The Opus 88 Jazz, like I mentioned, you know, a little bit less rough, but still there. And again, I said the 2000, if you grip it past the stainless steel part, very matte, very secure on your fingers. And then the Pocket 6 in satin black, that one has glossy threads so that they don't actually, you know, rub off the mat. But the grip is the same as the rest of the pen, and it is indeed matte. And then our current Diplomat Magnums, the old Diplomat Magnums, the whole thing used to be kind of a matte, kind of a rubbery feel. Remember the first gen of the Magnums? Those are gone, but the current Magnums have a rough plastic feel to them. It's not like rubbery grip, but it is a rougher. Like if you run your fingernails along it, you'll hear something. So those are there. And then perhaps the most grippy grips that I can think of that we have are the brushed stainless steel Studio and the LS Studio in all black. Yeah. Both of those pens have a literal rubber grip. It's probably the most rubbery, grippy grip you can get on our site at this moment, unless something's totally flying by my radar.
No, I agree with them.
So those I would recommend. And, you know, if you if you're talking about scoping out safaris, maybe you like the Lamy nibs anyway. The LS All Black, I believe that's a gold nib pen, so that's going to be higher up there. But the Stainless Steel Studio also has that same black grip, and that one's one of the steel nib studios, so more affordable there. And as far as what can you do to make it more grippy, I know Brian's got some other suggestions, but I've used a lot of Plasti-Dip spray for craft purposes, and it's a spray-on sort of rubber coating that some people use to coat tool handles and things like that. If you are careful and remove any parts that you don't want covered, you could probably coat a few passes on your grip section to add that. They make it in actually different colors too. So that's an option. I usually use black, but I believe there's like clear red and blue and green as well. But I mean, black is probably what you're going to be going. But you know, just kind of read the instructions, treat it like any other spray paint. You know, be careful with your layering because it can get weird if you don't let things dry properly. But that's what I have the most experience with as far as making something more grippy and matte-like. But yeah, Brian might have some more to offer. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with everything you said. I thought of a couple other pens as you were talking that might be worth a mention. Just, you know, because I don't know what your specific pen style preference is or whatever, but me personally, big fan of Lamy 2000, surprising. But I do like it for that, for part of that grippiness.
Yeah.
Twisby 580 AL or ALR. Those are, you know, kind of that matte anodized metal. The ALR has texture to it specifically.
Very grippy.
Very grippy, but the, even to the AL is not a shiny metal. It's a matte kind of metal. So while most of the pen is still going to be a shiny, slick plastic, if the grip, you know, matters, then that might be a grip option for you there. And then I was thinking about Kaweco has some pens too that kind of fall into that category. Most of their sport pens are plastic, shiny plastic, but the All Sports, the aluminum ones, those fall into that category. Also the Piston pen, which we're going to show you today, that is also kind of like a matte metal, as well as the Percao. Those are not slick plastic either. They're kind of a textured things. We don't talk about the Percaos very often,
but they
are that kind of like textured.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Safari, you know, the matte Safaris are. Lamy CP1 also, that is both a kind of rough plastic and it's got a ribbed grip section to it. So that is very grippy. And then Twisby Precision, that's another one that we don't talk about very often. That's a metal pen that's got a kind of a matte anodized thing going on.
I can't even picture the grip. God, I'm always forgetting about the Precision. That was when you stumped me on during one of the blind things. I like
that's because you don't think
never.
Metal
I still
pen
don't
when you think Twisby.
I remember that clip tripped me up so bad because I thought it was a Caran d'Ache.
Yeah, let me see if I had the picture of it. Yeah, there you go. See, it's like the metal grip.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's like a brushed metal sort
of
deal.
Yeah, like a brushed metal. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that would do it too. And then I went through, and since you mentioned you weren't sure about the Safaris, I'll just give you a quick reference here. I have all the matte Safaris that are currently available. So charcoal, obviously, as you mentioned, and then a lot of these other ones are special editions.
Yeah.
So we have cream and strawberry special editions. We have violet blackberry, which is a shiny body, but the grip is matte.
Oh.
So that's a thing. And then we have Lytros, Akwaski, and Spring Green.
Yes.
Those are all special editions as well that are all matte. Pink Cliff, which also just came out. That one is all matte. The Mango Special Edition as well, though we're out of stock of those. They may be on the outs. So I will say, you know, I'll speak a little bit to the site. So designating texture on the site is going to be a challenge. Partly because, as we mentioned already, it's like, who defines whether something is exactly matte or not? And that could be up for debate, on certain pens, especially. And then you get into some pens that are partially matte,
right,
and partially not matte.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, while it is, you know, you've explained very well that you care mostly about the grip, but how do we then designate the texture of the grip versus the, you know, it's like, it's getting so detailed here that if we go to this level of detail to designate different features of pens on our site, you would end up with like 45 different options you could select, which maybe that's what y'all want. I don't know. Maybe it's like a pen cast. You're like, yeah, more is better. Just keep it going. Can't have too much. I mean, that is something for us to consider. So I am kind of curious if this is truly a like pain point that a lot of people have. You know, that's why we have the designations on our site. So that is something we can consider, but I will say it is a little complicated because, you know, you do end up with some pens like the not Pink Cliff, the other one,
Violet Blackberry,
where it's a shiny body, but a matte grip.
Yeah. Or the Stainless Steel Studio.
Yep, exactly. Or you end up with pens that are the opposite, like the Pilot Metropolitan, where it is a matte body, but a slick grip.
The Explorer.
Well, the Explorer is that way too. But the Metropolitan as well.
It's got the anodized
kind of finish to it.
Yep, yep.
But it's got just a regular shiny plastic grip.
But the Black Matte Explorer has a slick plastic grip.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go. And
Sorry, Samantha.
And that's the same way the Lamy All-Stars are too.
Yes.
Are those even matte? Those ones, right. I think are like, they're not shiny metal.
Yeah. It's basically like shiny yes or no.
It's tough. Those ones specifically are some of the hardest for me.
For me, it'd be easier to say like, is this glossy? Yes or no. Like glossy to me is like a thing. Because I would say that the Stainless Steel Studio, not glossy, you know, but that
it's definitely not glossy,
but it's still, but then if for someone seeking matte pens, you're going to still have a massive, massive bucket to sort through.
Yeah. But I mean, it's better than not having any bucket,
yeah.
I guess. So yeah. I don't know. It does get kind of nuanced, and that is kind of tough. And then I have some thoughts on roughing up.
Oh, this is the part of your answer I'm most curious about.
So I will say,
I'm hoping you're going to describe to us how to sandblast things.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could do all this stuff. So I can go into detail about this if you want. I will say you're absolutely in warranty voiding territory here by doing any of these things. So only do this on a pen that you would be fine totally throwing away, because it's more likely than not that you will ruin it by trying any of these things. And you just need to be ready for that. The Plasti Dip thing, maybe not as much, because I feel like if it's a spray on thing like that, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work well, that you could probably scrape it off and be sort of back to zero.
I don't know. It's kind of like spray paint. Like you'd need to, because it's also a primer too.
So you think it would like bond really
a lot? I can't say, because I've only ever used it on foam.
Mm.
But I know that people use it on metal just fine.
I've used it on metal.
Yeah.
I've used it on slicker metal.
Yeah.
It
adheres pretty well.
It does, but I've also had it scrape off too.
Interesting. Okay.
But that's,
I don't know.
I've been using it in a totally different context though.
Yeah.
I use it to like coat certain metal parts that I like attach to my lawnmower and tractor and stuff like that.
I use it to make kids' Halloween armor.
See, it's just a lot of different uses apparently. But I've definitely had it where it can like wear off and kind of scratch away. So I'd be inclined to think like it can be done, though you're not going to end up with like exactly the grip that you started with.
I would say that from my experience, you would end up with something kind of close to the grip you find on the Stainless Steel Studio.
Yeah. But it's probably going to be ugly,
like,
because you're not going to spray it perfectly even.
No.
It's going to be kind of gloppy and it's going to be funky and weird.
More likely
than not. Be ready
for
that.
Yeah.
Because it's such a small area you're trying to spray.
Yeah.
It's going to be difficult to get that nice and smooth and even.
You need to go light.
Super light.
Yeah.
You would need to like...
a lot of layers, very light.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would tape off anything that you're not trying to coat as well. So
meticulously.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing to experiment with. I don't know. Maybe I'll see if I have any bum pens. I could try it out sometime. But
I've got some plastic dip at home for sure.
Yeah, I've got some of the spray stuff. I think you can buy it in a can where you can actually dip it too.
Oh yeah, but that's how it was originally.
Yeah, yeah,
plastic dip.
But I don't know how that would work on a pen grip, because I feel like even if you remove the nib and the feed, if you dip it, the plastic dip's going to get all on the inside where the housing is going to be, and it's going to ruin the thing. Mm. So I would say don't go with the dippy kind. Go with the spray kind.
Yeah.
That's the only way that I could. Or the dip kind, could you paint it on? I don't know. Feels like it'd be too thick for that.
Yeah.
I've never tried painting that stuff on, but maybe there's a way to do it. I don't know. It's probably a 5-minute crafts or something out there that, you know.
Oh, sure.
Has something like that. But I will say if you don't want to go that route, then you want to rough it up. Sandpaper would be the way to do it. Probably not the grit of sandpaper that you would typically find for like sanding wood and stuff like that, because I think it's going to be way too coarse. You would probably want to at minimum go with a wet sandpaper like you would have for like automotive paint or something, you know, get them up into like the 800, 1000 grit, the stuff that's like almost doesn't even really feel like sandpaper. It feels more like a leather type of thing. Or
like micro mesh.
Getting like a micro mesh. Yeah. Micro mesh is just like even further up the
could you use our micro mesh and just take a really, really long time?
I mean, so whatever grit you use, it's
because that's like 12,000, right?
It's 12,000, but it's not exactly the same as like sandpaper is typically measured, of course, because that would be too easy.
Of course.
didn't even mean that to happen. So I mean, yeah, you could definitely try the micro mesh. I would still tape it off so you don't sand anything you're not trying to sand. But yeah, you could definitely try micro mesh. My guess is that the 12,000 grit micro mesh that we sell is going to rough it up more than like a high polish like you probably already have on your grips, but I don't think it's going to get you that much of a matte finish because it's still too fine of a micro mesh.
I feel like it would probably make more of a difference on metal than it would plastic.
Maybe. It's basically going to knock the shine off
and
get you kind of that like all-star type finish. Maybe it's not going to give you like a meaningful texture to it probably, because it's still a pretty smooth abrasive. If you wanted to go, I don't think we sell anything that would get you there, but I personally in pen making and other things have used micro mesh that is a rougher grit. So I've bought them in pads. There's like 12 different grits that you can buy in pads, or like if you've ever bought the kits that you use to polish up old car headlights, that's basically what you're buying, is that type of micro mesh too. So one of those types of grit, you know, is probably going to be in the right vein, like a 3000 grit or 5000 grit, somewhere in that range.
What about one of the surfaces on a fingernail buff stick?
Yeah, that's exactly what that is. It's that same kind of thing.
So you might have one of those lying around.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably the most accessible way to do it.
Because you usually have a pink, a white, and a black on those things, I think.
Or sometimes a gray, which is basically like a micro mesh. You know?
Yeah, the gray, that's probably going to be the softest thing. So
it's probably going to be too fine.
I would probably, of the three, I would probably pick the one in the middle.
Well, I would start, you know, if you've never done it before, I would start with a finer grit, and you can always go coarser.
Yeah.
But I will say, if you're talking about a slick metal of some kind, be prepared for it to get ugly, because you're probably, you know, most metal pens have some kind of coating on them. It's not the raw metal that you're working with. So if you start to sand away, then you might be sanding through the coating, and then who knows what that thing's going to look like by the time you're done with it. You could end up with a, you know, an oxide brass kind of a look, you know, which, you know, hey, that's a look, but, you know, just be ready for that. And then the other one I had was, you know, this is another option if you don't want to go the plastic dip route, if you don't want that like rubbery kind of texture, but you still want to spray something, you could tape off the parts that you don't want to do and use a spray lacquer. So lacquer will typically bond pretty well to most resins, and metals, and, you can buy lacquer in like a satin finish. So it's got some, you know, polymerized whatever the heck that stuff is in there to give it, you know, a knocked down, not as glossy looking finish, and will also there subsequently make it feel a little grippier. And just lacquer in general feels a little grippier than like a bare metal or something, and it wouldn't drastically change the look either. You know, you'd essentially be spraying a finish on top of it, so you'd actually be protecting it even better. So that's another route to go that could maybe enhance the grip a little bit.
I kind of wish they would do that with the studios that have like a lacquered color over them, if they would lacquer that like slick steel grip, lacquer the whole thing, that would make it nice and comfortable, but it would still have that same vibe.
Yeah, interesting. I'm trying to think. I mean, like when you get a vanishing point, that's basically what they're doing is they're spraying lacquer over top of metal. I don't know if they do it. I would imagine they do some kind of clear coat on top of that.
When it's like studio grip?
What's like how they do it? Well, I don't know about any grips. I'm talking about like the body of the pen.
Yeah. Well, some of the studios have it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not all of the studios. Most of them, I feel like, are more of an anodized kind of.
Yeah. The matte ones are, I'm sorry, the lacquered ones are more rare. Yeah. They're usually like special editions and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, you got a few options here. You know, if you want to ruin some pens and you just feel like experimenting, go nuts. I think you don't have a lot to lose unless you have pens to lose that you don't want to.
Or we can keep talking about it so much that you just feel compelled to do it.
I mean,
because I think you would eventually. If we keep going, you're going to get too curious.
I'm going to say it definitely got me curious. I've definitely I've never done it for grip texture before, but I've definitely spray painted some pens before.
Oh, you've done some experimenting. Yes.
Yeah, because it's like if we're trying to get some exclusive design or something and we're just having a hard time, you know, visualizing it or getting our, you know, supplier to like visualize it, I'll be like, well, let's show them what it would look like. You know what I mean? And that's worked sometimes. So anyway, I think that about takes care of that one.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, appreciate that.
All right, we're going to go home with number 5.
All right.
From C Inc's video. We're going to ask, what's the pen everyone loves, but you don't?
This is hard because I can convince myself I love every pen.
Yes.
But I guess I have some like ones that I prefer over others for sure. But I genuinely like, there's very few pens that I like truly hate.
Oh yeah. No, we wouldn't sell anything that we think is garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything we sell is like of decent enough quality where I use it. But like, I definitely have my own preferences. So I guess that's kind of what I'll speak
to. Yeah. Well, what sort of like counterculture preferences do you have?
Yeah. I don't know if I have anything that countercultural. You know, this is why I have a collection of insane number of pens is because I kind of like them all. But I started listing some out and then I recognized that I have a pretty strong theme to the ones that I will tend to pass over when I'm going to pick out a pen, right? And it's basically pens that are really thin, that are really light, or really short. No, I'm a big person. I have big hands. You know, I like to hold substantially adequate. I mean, to me, what feels like pens that are sized more to fit my larger hands. So when pens are, you know, smaller, it's not that I don't like them or don't want to, use them ever. But if I'm like got to write out like a full page of notes, I'm not going to grab one of these pens because it's just not going to be that comfortable for me.
I think substantial is the right word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like you like the traveler's pen, but there's like some substance to it.
I do, but I would not want to write a full page of notes with it.
Granted.
I like it because it's small and it's like, it's the convenience. It's kind of like the package that it comes in and it's super durable.
Yeah.
But I don't like as its own, if you were like, there's one pen that you can have all the time, I'd be like, yeah, that would not even come into the running. So basically everything that I'm going to list here falls into some kind of category, except maybe with one exception. So probably one of the biggest ones that I think is really kind of the spirit of this question is the Lamy CP1. A lot of people love that pen and I'm just like, I get it, but I also don't get it. It's I don't know if it's my least favorite Lamy pen, but it could arguably be made that it's just not my jam. I like it. It looks cool. I like it fits what it is, but also too, like to me, the grip on that pen, it feels cheaper than the rest of the pen. And I don't know, because
my one complaint about the pen. I like the pen, but that grip is like,
that's the part you're holding.
It's a little bit of a swing and a miss.
Yeah. And again, it's because it just makes it feel lighter and thinner and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that one, I like it design wise. I think it looks good, like it's all black and stuff like that, but yeah, when I actually go to write with that thing, I'm like, yeah, pass.
Yeah.
Basically maybe that's what it is. Maybe it just feels too much like a pencil or just like a disposable ballpoint.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah. Once I discovered like larger fountain pens, I was like, this is how I want to go from now on. Another one, this again kind of falls in the same category, but it's a little bit, I don't know, a little bit of a hot take here. It's the Diplomat Magnum. You know, it's a great pen. I love the pen, but for me,
not substantial.
It's not substantial. It's a very light pen, which again is great for some people, but it has a really, it's a relatively thin pen, but it has an even thinner grip. And beyond that, it's got a sort of a triangular thing, which makes effectively the diameter part you're actually holding even smaller. So it's like one of the thinnest grips that I can think of. And, you know, combine that with its lightness. I love the nib, though. I love the way the pen actually writes.
I would love if they made a metal Magnum.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. That's never going to happen, I'm sure, but because it's like an entirely different process, because it's like an injection molded pen. You can't really injection mold metal. You know,
they might just need to do lava inject, you know, because you can inject
that makes sense.
That's probably the easiest thing to do.
I think so. That sounds pretty good. Okay, anyway, Magnum, hot take, but you know, I have mixed feelings about that one. Okay, I'll go with the same theme. Kaweco Classic Sport also falls into that category. That is thin, light, and short. So it's kind of like...
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. I like the all sports better. And like the piston is good. It's the more substantial weight that I like. It's not a heavy pen, but it just feels like I'm holding something, you know? But again, the Kaweco Sports are great pens. A lot of people love using them. It was one of the, it was literally in the batch of first pens that I ever bought. Was a clear classic sport because I heard that people eyedropper converted them and I wanted to see what that was all about. And then that's when I learned that I'm like a small pocket eyedropper pen is not for me.
Do you remember what you filled it with?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay. But I'm saying, was it a catastrophe?
No, I didn't. I never had any disasters with it or anything.
I thought you were implying that it was like something bad happened.
No, but I was like thinking about it all the time. Gotcha. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
And I also like at the time, this is when we just... Actually, it was before we were selling fountain pens on Gooley Pens. You know, like Rachel was pregnant with our son. I was not going anywhere. I was working from home. So I was like, I don't really need a pocket pen. It wasn't solving any problems for me.
Yeah.
And then it was just a thin pen. So I was like, it was cool that I could like, it was a clear pen. I could see it. I could eyedropper. And I was like, that's pretty neat. But then I just never ended up really using it. So, but that's just me. Okay. And then the other one that I have... This could be a little hot take too. Lamy Joy and the Pilot Parallel. I don't like the big, long, chopstick-looking back end. Like, I get what it's for. It's meant to be more of a kind of calligraphy-looking thing. But, like, from a practical standpoint, it, like, sticks out of all my pen cases. It, you know, it makes it... The Lamy Joy at least does post. But it looks ridiculous when you post it because the cap is like up in the stratosphere.
Oh.
But it can post.
Really?
Yeah. The parallel can't though.
No.
I mean, it can hang out on the back of the pen, but the things are going to be rattling all around
it's like a
and
bell.
All that kind of stuff. So yeah. And then just the parallel too, it's got a roll stop, I guess, but it's not a clip. And that thing's just kind of weird.
That's super weird.
It's a really weird looking pen, if I got to be honest.
But
the pen writes so great.
It does.
Like, if you just took the grip out of that pen and put it on basically any other pen, I would like it more.
Like an Opus 88.
Yeah.
I still haven't done that.
No?
No.
Yeah, we got stuff going on. but yeah, I mean, again, I think for me, like the Lamys, because there are so many good Lamy options, it's easy to be like, yeah, I'm never going to use a Joy. Why would I do that? But some people absolutely love it. And I think part of that too is depends on like how you hold the pen and stuff like that. Like, you know, I think about like Liz Steele, you know, she's an urban sketcher. She loves the Lamy Joy. But I think part of that's because just the way that she uses it to draw and stuff like that fits more her preference. So I don't know. Again, not dogging on anybody that likes these.
No, I don't. Those are all pretty valid.
Yeah. It's just a preference thing. What about you, Drew?
Everybody likes the Eco.
It's a great pen.
It's a great pen for a lot of people.
Mm.
It's not a great pen for me.
Really?
I don't, like you.
I know you like the Swipe more, but do you like, say the Swipe didn't exist, would you still be like, nah, I'll pass on the Eco?
I would, yeah.
Really?
Now, like you with the diameter and the lack of substance, I am a person who finds no benefit in high capacity internal reservoir pens.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Okay.
So
yeah. Yeah.
To me, like,
it's not solving any problems.
And I used to use my 580s and my VACs more.
Okay.
And then over time, I just kind of realized like this is just too much ink for me. I don't want this much ink. And after using them for so long, my preferences have just changed. And I now no longer find high capacity fountain pens to be in the pro column when choosing what to buy. And that's just because of the way I use my pens. I like to switch out ink often. And I think that that is, you know, I find just as much joy in trying new ink than I do, you know, trying more pens, sometimes more so. So
that's a good point.
So those just don't hold, I just don't see the value in, you know, the eco. If I were to recommend a starter pen, you know, if you are the person who wants to have the same ink in your pen for a long time, either because you don't want to deal with changing inks or you're just going to write a ton, then yes, the eco is great for you. But I can also argue that the swipe, you still get a ton of ink because those converters are massive. It's the biggest converter on the market.
Or the cartridges. You know,
yeah. Like they're both high capacity. Mm-hmm. So like, and it's more affordable than the Eco. So I'm like, you know, why not just get the swipe? Now I will
say there's a case for that.
The clip is useless on the swipe for sure.
Yeah. It's just a suggestion.
And then if you do try to put it on a bunch of stuff, it ends up cracking and breaking. So just ignore the cap, the clip. But so yeah, that's my thing. I don't see it. I think there are better alternatives in that price range.
That's fair.
Now,
depending on how you're using it, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then, but I will say, like, for that, when you get up into that $50 to $75 range where you're into the 580 and the VAC, I do see the merit there because in that price range, it's hard for me to say there's a better pen in here somewhere.
Okay. Like, interesting.
You know, but in the eco price range, there are better options for me personally. And, you know, I could argue that the swipe is just more bang for your buck in every sense of the word, including capacity, because you can eyedropper it and get more capacity than the Eco, if that is your jam. The swipe covers all the bases that the Eco doesn't. Anyway, that is my counter to something that's popular.
All right.
My other semi-hot take is that the 823, I think, is not for me.
Ooh, that is a hot take.
Again, well, it's less hot if I say I just prefer the 743. So, which is essentially the same exact pen without the internal filler.
Right.
For me, I just don't see the appeal to buy. Now, the color I love, the Amber 823, stunning. Absolutely. Like better than either of the two options for the 743. Sure. But that's still not enough for me to jump up in price a little bit and have to deal with an internal filler that I can't disassemble legally.
You can. You can also do that with a Twisby wrench.
Shh.
But you shouldn't because Pilot says you shouldn't.
No respectable retailer would ever encourage that.
No one who maintains their warranty on their pens would do that.
But
you can totally do it.
You can totally do it. The 743, though, you get the same exact writing experience, you know, more nib offerings.
True.
And it's so much easier to clean. And like we mentioned earlier about the how easily it is to pull the nib and feed out of the section of the steel nib Pilots, man, it's just as easy to pull it out of the gold nib Pilots. They're so easy, and they're usually keyed, like you said, so that the nib and the feed sit well together. There's no guesswork involved. And clean.
The Pilot says you shouldn't do that.
No.
Just to be clear.
We're gonna have the Pilot police
Pilot
come
doesn't
after
want you to do that. Yeah.
But you can fully clean it with no problem, and you
can,
just
you can use a bulb syringe on that pen.
Really
that
easily.
That is a huge plus.
It is, and you save a little bit of money. So unless you are just, you know, hell bent for capacity, I feel like the 743 is a better option than the.
I think it's a really. I think literally just that right there could be the determining factor for both your pens, really.
Yeah.
Because like me, I'm not writing with one pen all the time, but I like the Eco 580 as well and the 823 because they have a big ink capacity, which means I can fill it and then like leave it for months at my desk. And then like these are the pens that I'm like, I've got all these other pens that I inked up and forgot how long ago I inked them up, and I go to write with them. I'm like, oh crap, that one's dried out. But these other, like the Eco, the 823, these are the ones that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I can see the ink in them easily. And then it's like, I know, because they seal really well.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be ready to go when I go to use it.
Your seeking of large capacity pens is not because you're going to be writing with them. It's because you just need it to be able to evaporate, you know, to a point where it's still usable.
Yeah. You could probably make that argument.
That's an interesting benefit, but you're not wrong. Like that's valid.
I'm probably a very specific use case in this scenario because I don't think most people are, you know, inking up dozens of pens at a time and just leaving them for months. That's unique to my situation because most normal human beings would be like, I will use the pens that I already have inked up, or I will clean it out and, you know, cycle it through. But I have a lot of instances where I need to be inking up new pens, either to try out new inks or try out new pens and nibs and stuff like that. And then, you know, I'm like trying it out, like the, you know, Quaco Piston or something like that. I might ink it up. And then, you know, other people on the team want to try it. And so it gets passed around for a while. And then it eventually kind of makes its way back to me, or I might have to use it for the nib nook or something like that. And then it just kind of like falls into like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's kind of there. Did I ink that up? Did I remember? You know, so much has happened since then. So I have a lot of pens that fall into that category for me. So the ones that are like the big ink capacity like this, that's, I know that they're going to be, yeah, they're going to be there for me when I need them.
That's right.
Until eventually when they do dry out and then I have to actually clean them. And then it is a pain. I will give you that. And I do not like to change the inks out of those pens.
The 823, when you push that vacuum rod all the way down after you think you've gotten it clean.
Oh,
and you
and
see
it spritzes
that little...
up in there. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. If you got any like OCD type tendencies, all vac fillers are a pain. Or demo vac fillers, I should say.
Yeah.
That's where like, okay, a Homo sapiens like lava, that would be fine.
I would like the 823 more if it had more of a Riallo look, where it was mostly opaque with a large ink window down at the base.
Yeah.
Then it was mostly opaque. And I would love a 743 that was a demonstrator.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Because I can clean that thing fully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True. Cool. Good questions.
Yeah.
Definitely, y'all, we'd love to hear your comments to know what you think of the pens that we mentioned and then which ones that you have the same kind of thing. Like, what are your hot take pens that you just can't get into, even if it's popular? If you have any feedback, of course, you can leave that. You can leave us comments, you know, for future questions. You can also email us at pencast@gouletpens.com so we have more questions to do. Now we're going to move on. We're going to do the pen spotlights on the Quaco Piston pen. All right, here we go. Quaco. So, there's, I guess, two versions of this pen. There's the kit or the set, which comes with ink, and then there's just the pen. The pen is the same. It's just a matter of, does it come with this cool little tin and, with this bottle of ink? So, I'll pull that up. The tin is cool. It's like kind of 3D a little bit. It's got some little whatever things on here. Though ironically, the instructions don't show you how to fill a piston pen, which
I think
is really funny. It's got a sticker. I think that's a Quaco sticker. Whatever. Here's the pen. This is what you care about. I guess if you want to leave this tin sitting around and you want to stick your pen.
Yeah, I didn't understand what that hole was for when I did my what's new.
I think it's for that.
But it's loose.
It's kind of loose. And also, like, this is like, it's like a plastic with like a flacking or something on top of it. So it's not like super durable. Like you can hear the plastic in there. So I think it's more just like for a simple presentation, but I don't know anybody who stores the pens they're actively using like this, but sure. If you want to just display it, you know, and have it on there, you got options. And then it's got the bottle of ink as well, 32 milliliters.
Interesting.
Because why not? And it comes in the most tip overable bottle that you could possibly imagine.
Take that, Ferris wheel press.
Or the Dymine 30 mils. Those are pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, they are.
That was the first ink that I ever spilled was a 30 mil Dymine.
Oh.
I'd lost like half the bottle. Mm-hmm. Literally first time I went to go to ink my pen, of course. Second time. Sorry. Get my story straight. Okay, so the tin over there. And here's the pen.
There we go. Looks like a Quaco.
Yep, it's got that. It's metal, so it's got some weight to it, which I like. And then it's got, you know, kind of that, I don't know, matte adjacent finish. I don't know what you would call that.
Matte adjacent again.
And then I grabbed a couple other Quacos so you could see how they compare. So here is the classic sport. This is the iridescent one, which looks amazing. And
the length looks almost identical.
It's very, very close. I think it's slightly different with the nib in there, but basically it's the same. The weight is different, though, obviously, because it's metal.
But people that are, you know, expecting a form factor similar to the Quaco sports that they mm-hmm. know and love should not be disappointed.
And then I grabbed this. Not that this is a pen that a lot of people know about, or it's not even widely available anymore. We don't have it anymore. This is the Quaco Original. So this is like, I think, like an anniversary version or something. I don't remember the details, but it's a longer pen. this one takes a number six nib as well. So I actually liked the original a lot, but you can at least get a sense of the size. It's noticeably smaller.
The material looks the same too.
But yeah, it's the same kind of metal. So if you're familiar with the original at all, it feels exactly like the original. And plus, these are the only two that have the integrated clip.
That's right.
Which, fun fact, you can actually, if you don't like the clip, you can unscrew your little top piece here and you can pull the clip off. So you have that as an option. You can see the nib like, ooh, just kind of poking out there.
There it is.
Now, I will say, if you do that, when you go to screw this part back on, it almost sits flush. It has a little line there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that bothers you. For me, it's like, okay, it would be nice if it was a little cleaner fitting there, but I think the intention is for the clip to be on there. And I feel like it would still seal up okay because it feels like it's a very tight fit on there. So I don't think that taking the clip off would sacrifice your
seal?
Seal. So anyway, that is an option. I'll put it back on. And it does go on in a certain way. I wasn't sure about that, but it's got, oh my gosh, it's got this little indentation here, which matches up. Good Lord. So professional. It's got this little, you know, kind of notch that has to fit in there. So the clip, when you put it on, has to go on in that particular direction. But then, you know, it's easy to remove. It's got the little medallion in the top, which is nice.
Now, I will say, when I have used this pen to justify your droppage, I have dropped the blind cap several times. Is it just me, or is that thing kind of slippery?
Oh, I don't know if it's slippery. I think it's just really small, and it's just like easy to
There's something drop. About the texture. It's like it's matte, but it's also kind of slick. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's just me.
So it has a blind cap, which is like you wouldn't necessarily know that just by looking at it. So yeah, to fill it, you got this teeny little thing, but it's like filling with a converter. It's about that diameter.
Yeah.
So it's not like a totally foreign concept. And I do like the little thing in there. I like that it's the little medallion's kind of hidden in
that
the back
cool.
there. So you're like, yeah, I know it's there, but it's not like being too flashy, you know? And then here's the pen.
There we go.
It's got an ink window, which I love.
Yeah, nice really, smoky really, ink window.
Yeah, nice kind of smoky ink window. I think it has a little bit of a colored tint to it as well.
Yeah.
I've inked this up with the blue ink, so at first I was like, is that some of the ink left in there? I think this is pretty much just how it looks out of
the
box.
I feel like there's had, like, a few Pelicans that have done a smoke window.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So then, you know, if you're familiar with the form factor of other Kaweco Sports, I mean, it's basically identical to that. Grip size. The grip might be a teensy bit wider because the interesting thing about this pen, aside from the piston part, obviously, and the fact that it's metal, is that it has a screw removable housing unit, whereas the regular Kawakos are pressure fit in there. So usually when you're pulling a nib out of a sport, you're just pulling the nib and feed straight out of there, kind of like, you know, pilot style. But this one is Pelican style. So you can literally just unscrew. Whoop. Go figure.
Ah.
Of course it's going to do that as I'm trying to demonstrate it. Well, okay. We've pulled the nib and feed out of this one a bunch. So that's really funny that it's not gripping on there anymore. So you can get, let's see if I can, there we go. Okay. So there's the housing, and it's got a little O-ring in there too. So yeah, this is kind of new.
So when you were able to remove it, just for anybody who does encounter that issue at home, were you pressing down a little bit as you turned?
Yeah, I was using my fingers to like put a little bit of pressure on the actual thing there.
There you go.
And then that did it enough.
Cool.
But we've pulled the nib and stuff out of this a bunch of times. So it's probably just that it's, you know, it's lost a little bit of it, or maybe we screwed it in so tight. I tend to do that. I tend to screw things in really tight. So it could have been that. Now, you know, because I was kind of curious, like, are the nibs any different? The writing experience any different? The nibs themselves are basically identical. You know, it's a different color, but the nibs themselves, I think you could swap if you wanted to. I mean, now we have separate nib units, so you could just get a replacement if you wanted. But if you have sports already and you want to swap the nibs, you can do that. However, if you're going to do that, I will say the feed is different on both pens. And I'm going to try to do this in a way that
wow.
you can see both.
That one came out easy.
Yeah, you can tell I've removed these a bunch of times. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm trying not to mix them up too much. So because you've got it in a housing versus a non-housing, I don't know how easily you can see that, but on the new pen, the piston, the feed is longer.
Mm.
So if you're going to swap them, leave the feed with the pen and just swap the metal part of the nib.
Gotcha. So the new one on the piston has a shorter feed.
Correct.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure if I said that right just now, but yes, that is correct. So the one that I pulled off of this pen is a little bit longer. So, you know, I don't know if the feed is any different in terms of like flow or anything like that. When I was writing with it, it didn't seem to be any different. It's literally just like the length, the size different. And I think that's probably because either something with the housing or maybe it's because of like the metal, you know, nature of it or something. I don't know. They just made it shorter.
Interesting.
The feed is slightly shorter. So yeah, it's just something to keep in mind. And then, you know, it's, let's see here. I think it's just fine nibs, right? Or is it a fine and medium? The options are limited for the piston.
I don't recall off the top of my head.
It's definitely limited, but the nib, that's part of why we offered the separate nibs too, is because that expands the offering a little bit, even up to double broad. But it writes exactly the same as another Quaco, which I can, if we got time, I can write, ink it up super duper quick. I'll show y'all how it works. I'll use the ink that comes with it. Why not? We don't normally sell Quaco ink, so I'm not super familiar with it.
It's been a long time.
It has been a while. This comes with a blue-black. And then, you know, it's like any other piston pen. The piston mechanism is very smooth, though.
Yeah.
I will say that. You can see there, it's a double-wall piston in there as well. It's such a cute little piston. Yeah, and then here we go. This is another example of a pen that I'm going to ink up and then just have to clean out later. So I won't ink it up all the way just because there's no way I'm going to use all the ink in this pen before it needs to be cleaned out. There you go. Put my little blind cap back on. And did I grab a paper towel? Nah.
Yeah.
Oh, we got one here. Okay. So I'll just dab that off a little bit. Try not to knock over my bottle of ink because I feel like I could easily do that. This is a glass bottle as well, so it's, you know, kind of cool. I will say the bottle looks kind of nice, actually.
I like it.
And then I generally like to post my Quaco pens.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very smooth nib, I got to be honest. It feels really good. There you go, Quaco. Piston.
Very cool.
Fine.
It's a solid blue-black, a little purpley.
Yeah, it's a very, like a royal blue.
Yeah.
Leans very purple.
It might just be because I'm comparing it to what you have here, which is probably blue water ice, right?
I believe so. But yeah. it is objectively a very purpley blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all around, you know, the pen in the set with a bottle of ink is $175, which is like not a steal. But also, like, I will say the build quality is really nice if you're a fan of Quaco. Like,
mm-hmm.
It feels like you're paying a very fair price for the quality pen that it is. So I think if you're into it, you won't be disappointed, but it's not going to be like, oh, this is the $175 pen that everybody's got to get. You know, I think it'll be good for those who like it, and for those that aren't as into it, that's totally cool.
I do wonder, a metal internal piston pen,
mm-hmm.
like those are not common.
No, not so much.
I'm trying to think.
They're definitely around. But basically, if you do it that way, you have to essentially have like a sleeve inside the whole
pen. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a metal internal piston pen, and it's not. I'm not getting one in my brain.
The stainless steel Lamy 2000.
Oh, there we go.
That would fall into that
category. So I'm searching for like
Twisby Precision.
Precision is a metal one. Okay, here we go. You have successfully and relevantly mentioned the Precision, the Precision twice. What is happening?
I don't know, man. It's just I'm sure there's others that I'm just not thinking about. It's hard because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we don't have that many piston pens.
No.
Like, piston is not nearly as prevalent of a filling mechanism as proportionally as I feel like maybe it used to be, but I don't know. Maybe that's just totally anecdotal, biased, uninformed. But I feel like pistons used to be a much bigger deal, especially on higher end pens.
Well, I think of in terms of the price, you've got Twisby All Sports that are over $100.
Mm-hmm.
So adding, you know, a piston inside of one of them, I think the price is totally justifiable.
I think so too.
If you think that there, if you think that the Twisby All Sport is realistically priced, then this one's quite competitive.
Yeah. See, now I'm curious. Let's see here.
About metal internal pistons.
Metal body material. Metal. We don't have a lot of metal pens.
Yeah.
17.
17 overall, even without the
metal
piston.
Pens. Yeah. And then how many of those are piston? Let me see. Since we have these as an option on our site, I'm just literally going onto our site and looking at it. I know we have filling mechanism. Where are you at? There we go.
Zero. Cartridge converter.
Huh.
The precision should be on there.
Something's not right here.
Yeah. Because you just named two.
Oh, metal. Okay, we have stainless steel is separate from metal.
Oh,
and you have titanium. See, this is where facets get really challenging.
Yeah.
You know?
Too many. Because, yeah.
Okay, when I do stainless steel.
Check for texture next.
Oh, now we have piston. Okay, hang on. Titanium. What other metal variants do we have? Sterling silver.
I will say
that's metal.
We at one point did have
lacquered metal. Oh boy. Oh,
gracious me.
That's 140 pens, most of which are vanishing points, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Carbon fiber cellulite. Copper. That's a metal as well. Dag on it. Okay, so if you just want to select metal pens, you got to click like 9 different things.
Oh, yeah.
That's rough.
Brass, too.
Brass. Oh, dag on it. Wow. This is crazy. This is why facets are so hard. Okay, piston. 6. We now have 6 options.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not going to scroll up yet.
So you said precision.
I said precision. Stainless steel 2000.
Yep.
There's 4 more.
Okay.
Piston.
Metal internal. Oh. Well, no, because the Nexus isn't a piston. It's a metal internal filler, but it's not
It falls under more
eyedropper.
More eyedropper. Yeah.
Oh
my gosh. Oh, this is. We won't drag this out too much because this is a total tangent.
The Conklin 125th anniversary Nozak.
Nozak. Oh, and then the piston Quaco is 2 different products on here.
Okay, so you were right.
Literally, the only
missed,
one was
you
the,
missed
Conklin,
the Conklin
Nozak.
But
that was the only other metal piston pen.
I'm still.
We have 4 metal piston filling pens on our site.
That's better than I would have done. I totally would have forgotten about both the stainless steel 2000 and
there you go.
Precision.
So,
always forget about the precision.
So this is your. Well, it's not the most affordable metal piston filling pen. That's the Twisby Precision. But it's the second most affordable metal piston filling pen that we offer.
I think the deal is there.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're interested in that, go check it out. I don't know. Is it going to be a regular offering or is that like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's not just like a special edition kind of a thing.
No, God.
Because I think the original was kind of
about how much engineering they, you know, how much money they had to spend. And there'd be no way
I would imagine
a temporary
so.
Thing.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, we've got it. Go check it out if you're interested. All right, that's it for that, and it's time for What's Happening.
I'll tell you what's happening.
What is happening?
I was lazy this weekend. Not like the laziest, but I had some solid good lazy times. I watched a couple episodes of Planet Earth 3, which I bought on disc on 4K, and I've been enjoying that, Sir David Attenborough, and crying when I probably shouldn't be, but I'm telling you, man, those animal narratives that they spin are
doing.
Sometimes I won't even cry until the making of part that they show after the show.
Oh, yeah.
Because, oh my God, I'm not going to talk about it, but it's just, it is compelling and in a beautiful, beautiful way, but I get very emotional on those series. So, but I'm enjoying them a lot. And so far I'm finished my first disc. It's a 6 disc set.
Wow.
So I've been making my way through those. And then I had the opportunity to watch a movie, and I chose the 1989 Batman.
Oh.
Had not seen that movie in quite a long time.
And Michael Keaton?
That's right.
Wow.
Archer walked in and saw a scene between Michael Keaton and Kim Basinger, and he was like, "Who's that?" I said, "That's Bruce Wayne. That's Batman." He's like, "That's not that.
It's a very different Batman.
That's a terrible Bruce Wayne. That doesn't look like Bruce Wayne at all." I'm like, "Well, he looks better as Batman than he does Bruce Wayne. I'll say that because he's got that like kind of floofy curly hair, like any other depiction of Bruce Wayne. You know, he's got that like chiseled jaw. You know, kind of that's not Michael Keaton exactly.
No,
but it held up just fine.
Yeah,
you know, I really liked how
I haven't seen him in probably 30 years.
There was lots of like matte painting backgrounds and practical effects and The Batmobile was real. It really drove around. Mm. The stunts were great, entertaining. Jack Nicholson was hilarious. And I always joked that there was that one moment where Michael Keaton has kind of a face-off against the Joker as Bruce Wayne, not as Batman. And he does this quote where he says, "You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts." Mm. And I'm like, that's Beetlejuice. Like, that's, you yeah. know, come on. You know, that was yeah. such a Beetlejuice voice.
This is an awesome Batmobile.
Oh, it's the best Batmobile by
I
far.
I like this Batmobile.
Oh, heck yeah. But I always thought it was funny how he went into the Beetlejuice voice. Those movies came out just a year apart.
Oh, yeah.
So Beetlejuice was 88, Batman was 89. So
he could have been filming. Exactly. At the same time. Yeah.
I had no idea. So Tim Burton did Beetlejuice and Batman 88 and 89, and then Batman Returns in 92, and then Edward Scissorhands in like 94, and then Nightmare Before Christmas like soon after that. Like he went on a 10-year
Batman Forever. Who was that? Wasn't was
that was
Tim
Joel
Burton?
Schumacher? You know, okay. Yeah, they okay. switched over to Joel Schumacher did the last two, and they were different. But yeah, that was solid. It was fun, Yeah, I bought a patch recently that was actually the patch that the Joker's goons wore on their jackets in that movie. So it was nice to see my patch on the goons. So this was the first time I actually removed a patch to make room for a patch because I wanted it on my chest, right on the breast pocket, because that's kind of where they had it.
Yeah.
So I took my Nightwing logo off, put that on my sleeve, and put the Joker logo
so it
there.
It didn't get like set aside,
relocated. Yeah.
Okay, I think that's fine.
And I'm almost done with that. Like, there's not a lot of room left on it. There's like maybe one little spot on the sleeve, but I'm pretty much done with my jacket. So
I think you could keep going on the inside. Have like your inside patches just.
It's
going
to get very warm. Yeah. It's going to. I'm insulating it.
That would be. You would feel that. I feel like that would give it a texture to the jacket.
Yeah,
it would be kind of weird.
Yeah, it would be kind of weird. And of course, you'd see the stitching on the other side too, which would be.
Well,
I need to start sewing through patches on the other side.
Oh, yeah, that I guess would look weird.
And then TV wise, my wife and I finished the Fallout TV series, which ended up being pretty solid. Walton Goggins delivered as usual. So that was a fun watch. And then when this episode is filming, like Pencast, I think today or tomorrow, the final episode of Shogun is going to come out. So we'll have knocked that out. So I don't know what we're going to watch next. No idea. We need to jump into something. But she hasn't had any shows recently, so we've been really pounding out some miniseries.
Well, and I feel like, too, like because of the writer's strike and stuff like that, there's kind of like a lull, at least it feels like to me, in stuff that's coming out right now.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Because like production got delayed on so many different things.
Yeah.
So it's like there's just not as much.
Game of Thrones House of the Dragon should be coming up here soon, but that's going to be like a weekly thing. And doing the whole wait in a week thing. I think I want to wait until they're all out.
That's like what we used to have to do all the time.
Yeah. But it's just weird now.
It makes you anticipate it, Drew.
Right. But this series specifically, it's like, you know, these big series like Game of Thrones, like they're not TV shows.
Yeah.
It's a movie broken up into like 10 pieces.
Yeah. They don't like wrap it up.
No, and then there's no cliffhangers. I mean, there's sometimes cliffhangers, but they don't need to like tune in next week. Like you're gonna watch it next week. Like if you watch episode one, you're gonna watch the whole thing usually. Yeah. Maybe we'll watch Severance again. I don't know. I've heard that that's a thing people do.
I mean, you haven't really seen it until you've watched it 10 times.
10 times. And I did do some light yard work, which, you know, you live in Richmond, same as I do. And Saturday was a great day.
It was beautiful.
It's like, as much as I hate yard work, like you can't have a day like that.
You can't have it more ideal. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, Drew, you'd be dumb not to go out and, you know, trim the hedges and do a little bit of weeding. So I just did some maintenance outside. So
nice.
Yeah, it was fine. And allergies weren't bad either on Saturday. So like I took it. However, weirdness struck last night as far as weather is concerned, because we had a frost warning.
Yeah.
Like our last frost date in zone 7A should have been the 17th of April. But here we are getting frost on like the
23rd?
Yeah. Ridiculous. Weird. And I have tomatoes in the ground. So I had to cover them. I think they're okay.
It didn't seem like a bad frost. Like
no, it wasn't.
I don't think it was as bad as
no, it wasn't.
For.
But I did cover them. I had some plastic drop cloth I dropped over them to kind of, you know, because they're also in a raised bed, so they don't get a lot of heat from the ground.
Oh, okay.
So they're probably a little bit more susceptible. And then I brought in my radishes and my peas and my little Japanese maple, just in case.
Okay.
Because they all look very happy right now. I don't want to mess with that.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything was good there. We went over some friend's house who recently had a baby and dropped them off some food. You know, they had, you know, they're in need of some love. They, everything's happy and healthy now, but you know, they were definitely thankful for some assistance.
Yeah, new babies are rough.
Yeah.
It's not as romantic as everybody tends to think that it is.
So we drove by there and saw the baby.
Yeah.
And then I've been slowly rebuilding the shattered, you know, 1,000-plus piece Lego Ecto 1 that needs to be rebuilt. So my motivation to rebuild it hasn't been high, but I'm getting through it. There's so many pieces, and they're so my whole computer room is filled with little tiny Dixie cups full of Legos, and I just want them gone. So that's my motivation.
That's your motivation, is just to get it over with.
Yeah.
Hey, sometimes that works, you know.
So working on that. But yeah, it was a pretty relaxing week. Obviously, we had the company dinner on Saturday as well. So I think it was a nice blend of, you know, had, you know, our dinner with friends that we usually do on Sunday night. And it was a nice blend of laziness and activity. So yeah, I'll take it.
That's good. Yeah, similar, sort of. I mean, a little less on the laziness, but there was some to be had. I had a really kind of like out of body experience on Saturday because the weather was beautiful, and I like tried fertilizing my lawn for the first time ever in my life this year, and it's working. My grass is growing like friggin' crazy. And it's been like, aside from the weird frost thing that we had going on, it's been pretty temperate here for the spring. We've had a good amount of rain, but not like, you know, crazy flooding amount of rain. It's like very consistent every few days kind of rain, which is like pretty ideal for like plants and stuff.
Yeah.
So the grass is growing really, really strong. So I was like, Joseph, like, you're mowing the lawn here. Like, there is no, oh, I don't know if I really feel like it. It's like, it's got to happen right now.
Because
it's
our
like,
house will be taken over. Yeah, it will like, be like.
It really needs to be done like every 4 or 5 days. Like, yeah. I'm not joking.
It'll be like Sleeping Beauty's castle if you don't,
that's right,
you know, keep this stuff at bay, bro.
That's right. So he was out there mowing the lawn. And then I needed to mulch because I got all my mulch delivered last week, which I've spread most of it, actually. It was 20 cubic yards, but I've gotten most of it spread. More on that in a minute because there's a story. But yeah, I have some hedges in the front. I have like 5 different hedges. You know, one is like the prickly, not a holly, but some other thing that's got a prickly whatever on it. And then a couple other, I don't know what the names of these plants are, but they've been growing out of control and they need to be cut back. And Ellie had expressed interest in doing that at some point, and I stored that away in my memory. And I was like, you know, the time to trim all these would be before I put down the new mulch. That way, whatever clippings and stuff that I don't
cover them
picking
up,
you just cover it right up. So it worked out really well. You know, I offered, I was like, hey, Ellie, you want some money? Let's trim these hedges. And she's like kind of artistic and stuff anyway. So I was like, what shape do you want to make these hedges? You know, I was like, you can't do anything too crazy. Cause I was like, there's a branching system in there you have to work with. But I was like, if you want to do like more squared or more round, that kind of a thing. So we had like 5 different ones and she made it symmetrical. It did some square, some round. And she did a pretty solid job, I got to say, for a 12-year-old. But we like put a tarp down or kind of around it so that all the clippings and stuff fell onto the tarp. We can kind of pull that away.
Nice.
Made cleaning up so much easier. I've learned this from having done it before and not done the tarp trick. That's definitely the way to do it.
That's interesting. I've never done that. I usually just kind of like grab what I can. I'm not meticulous about it. I have one of those like expandable, collapsible lawn bags I usually just take out there and I just scoop up the big pieces and throw them in there.
Yeah.
But obviously like the little leaves and stuff, I'm like, ah, whatever.
Yeah. Well, these particular bushes, they're like, they have like a lot of small pieces and stuff like that. There's not like big chunks. Plus we were using hedge trimmers. So it's just like.
Electric or?
Yeah. Well, I have both. Yeah. I've got like the cloppy kind,
yeah.
I don't know what that means, but then we got an electric one that I finally bought. I broke down and bought one.
Did you let her use that?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
Yeah, she handled it and she did a pretty darn good job. And I was like, cool, I don't have to do this again for the next, what is it? She's 12 now. So the next at least 6 years. So she's going to be my hedge trimming gal. But like the weather was beautiful. I was grabbing mulch, you know, and Ellie was trimming the hedges and Joseph was mowing the lawn all at the same time. And Rachel was inside, not doing anything outside because that's what she does. And I was just like, wow, like both my kids are working, helping me with the landscape. I was like, this is just a different place as a parent than I've been previously. And neither of them was like fighting me on it.
Wow.
They kind of know what they like to do. And we got a system worked out where they can earn some money and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, okay,
that's a milestone.
Feels like something's working, you know? So that was pretty cool. And it was just really, really pleasant outside. So yeah, got a lot of the mulching done. The only thing that I have left to do, is I got a mulch. We have a play set, you know, like you get when you have young kids. My kids are neither young nor small anymore. So, and, the play set that we had gotten was like one of those wood things with like, you know, it's got some swings on the side and then it's got a little fort type thing you can climb up and it's got a slide, you know, that type of thing. But, we had gotten it secondhand from somebody. They were like, we want to get rid of it and you can just have it for free if you just get it off our property.
Gotcha.
So
it's not a new
it's thing. Probably 25 years old, if I had to guess. Yeah. So the wood, I've already repaired it some, but now it's like definitely in need of some serious repair. And I was just like, what are we doing with this thing anymore?
Yeah.
I was like, I either need to repair it and like actually invest in and bring this thing back to life, or it's time to get rid of it. And we're getting rid of it. So I have like these landscape like timbers that I'd done around, you know, the mulch area where that playset is, mm-hmm. to kind of like contain the mulch and all that kind of stuff. But that was, I did that probably a decade ago at this point. So I was like, yeah, you know what? Since we're getting rid of the playset, I'm going to pull up those timbers too. And we're just going to make it just a more natural area. Cause we already had trees kind of around it with like mulch underneath the trees. And now it'll just be like one kind of connected area.
Oh yeah.
And make it look just a little more natural.
So you can keep the mulch there and just,
oh, I'll keep the mulch
put some
there.
Like
yeah.
little trees and stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, exactly. I might plant some more stuff in the future, but, or do like a bench swing or something, you know, like the kind of thing you would put on like a porch
yeah.
or something.
Bird feeder,
you know,
a little swing.
Grown-up swing. Yeah, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly.
I can envision that.
Yeah. So Rachel and I are halfway brainstorming something like that. But the first step is to get all that junk out of there that's there.
You know, it's great. That would be effortless. Some nice little koi pond.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Low upkeep.
Oh, that sounds,
you know,
really easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ponds are
so,
no maintenance.
So,
at all.
Yeah.
Definitely. Sounds great. No, actually, that would be kind of cool, but no, I'm not that into fish though, but like a pond, like I like running water.
It would be
like,
awesome,
cool.
But
like
the
I had
pump
some of
and everything, like,
oh,
oh
it's a
man.
Yeah, no, that is not simplifying my life in any
yeah,
way.
Filtration, keeping it the pH right for plants. If you put, you know,
especially
water plants in
and
there,
crap that we get. And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, that's gross. So yeah, we're definitely not going to do that. But, so I was pulling up those landscape timbers using some equipment and some mechanical advantage with leverage and all that stuff. I was not overexerting myself, but yes. And 40 is like right around the corner for me. So I've already got like age on the mind a little bit. But what happened was I pulled up these timbers. They're all 6x6 and they're 10 feet long. So they're big, but they're not like unmanageable.
It's like a railroad tie.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. But in order to keep them staked in the ground, I had drilled a hole and hammered rebar down.
Yeah.
You know, like 2 foot long rebar.
Yeah. I see that done to like make retaining walls and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So it was kind of like that vibe, yeah. You know? But it's been sitting on the ground. So like they're sort of rotting out on the bottom and stuff. And as I was pulling them up and I was like, yeah, it's probably good that I give these, you know, whatever. So I'll keep them and reuse them for something maybe in the future. But, cause it's like, I priced out what those things cost now. Holy crap.
The timbers?
Yeah. It's like $48
I mean,
per timber.
Like with
it's like $500 worth of timber. Wasn't that much when I paid for it a decade ago, but
you might a retaining wall might not be a terrible idea. Like with your creek, you know, the runoff.
Yeah,
and stuff
I was
like
that. I can definitely do something with
it.
All
might,
those
you might
logs.
Need it to stop something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm definitely keeping them. But I wanted to pull them all up and pull the rebar out so that I can use them just as the logs. So the problem is like, you know, the rebar's been in there for a while. So they were kind of tight in there because the rebar's corroded a little
yeah.
bit and all that kind of stuff. So I needed to like hammer out the rebar and then pull it through basically. So I like flipped the things over, hammered the rebar down, kind of through to loosen it up and then was able to pull it out.
I see.
But
so it came out of the ground fine.
It came out of the ground easy.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because I have a tractor and I just
yeah.
could pull it up with, you know, with that. But I needed to hammer out those things. So, you know, I'm doing this like, there's like three pieces of rebar in every one of these timbers, and I had at least a dozen of them.
You don't put together things that don't last.
Yes, this is true. So as I was hammering the rebar, I'm using this like little 3-pound sledge. It's not a huge, you know, you've seen my hammer collection.
Mjolnir.
It's one of my hammers. And so I was just using that. And, you know, so I'm kind of like, you know, like it's sort of like an axe chopping motion, sort of, because some of the rebar was kind of stuck and I had to put a decent amount of force in it. And just one of the times that I lifted my arms up, my back literally made a popping sound. And it was like pop. And I was like, oh, that doesn't feel normal. And I don't know what happened, but I was just doing a repetitive thing. I wasn't overexerting. But
this was just like 2 days ago.
This was on Saturday. Yeah. So, and then, you know, I kind of wrapped up what I was doing and it was kind of like, oh, that didn't feel great. It almost felt like you were
able to finish it.
Yeah. But I was almost done and I wrapped it up pretty good.
Oh.
I took it very gentle and then I wrapped it up because I knew it was going to rain on Sunday. So I had to get all the crap taken care of. So then I came in after that and I was like, Rachel, I think I did something to my back. And of course she's like, she sees all the shenanigans again, so I'm getting up to all the time. So she's always like low key, kind of worried I'm going to hurt myself somehow sometimes. But I was like, told her, so I was like, I wasn't doing anything careless. This was literally just doing normal stuff. And it just happened to things. So I did some research and I think I sprained my back. I think that's what happened.
Upper back?
Lower back.
Oh.
Lower back. Yeah. Like very low, just above my waistline. But I've been taking it easy, getting good rest and stuff like that. And it's feeling a lot better. So I'll go to the doctor if it like persists, but you know, I WebMD, you know, self-diagnosed or whatever. And I have not had a history of back problems, but it's always been in the back of my mind, just like gray hair, or like losing hair. And I'm now growing hair on my ears, which is fun. I get to trim that all the time, you know? So it's like these things that you, as you age, you're like, I'm just expecting these things to start to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, this is like the first back issue that I've had that's not like related to an extenuating circumstance of like falling on something or getting hit with something. It's like just doing my normal stuff hurt my back, and I was like, dang it.
Yeah,
this is where we're at now.
I remember the first time I went to the barber, and he just starts like, you know, he's doing the little buzzers here, and then he just starts going on my ears. I'm like, wait, what's he doing?
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, we're there.
This is what happens.
Okay, I see.
Yep.
Well, thank you, buddy.
100%. Yeah,
appreciate that.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the thing. No need for anybody to be concerned, but I am having to take it easy right now. So some of my outdoor adventures for the next couple of weeks might be not that adventurous. But yeah, so that's where I'm at. Just taking it easy. So it gave me a reason to like rest a little bit, but I'm still doing plenty.
I still play some video games.
I did play some video games. Played some more SnowRunner. Bought another DLC. Bought some additional locations that I can go drive my truck around.
There we go.
Bought some additional trucks, which are not better than the truck I already had. So I'm still using that original truck, which is awesome. So yeah, I'm just enjoying that game. It's fun. Playing my tenor sax still, even with my back issues. I find that like the back thing, I just need to change positions. Like if I lie down or sit or stand, any of those for like more than like half hour to an hour, it starts to feel kind of stiff. So if I get up and move and do something different, then it's fine. So I'm just having to be somewhat active now, which I normally am anyway.
Yeah.
There were quite a few
requests. I didn't put them in the feedback section, but quite a few requests for Brian playing the sax on the tractor.
Sax on the tractor.
What song
would be appropriate to play on a tractor?
Something not tractory at all.
Not tractory at all.
No.
Like a Mozart concerto.
Yes.
I've been practicing
100%
Mozart's clarinet concerto.
Not that there is a very tractory saxophone song, but
I don't think tractors and saxophones are typically associated in any way whatsoever.
That's why this needs to happen. Yeah.
It could happen. I don't know. If we get enough requests, if we get 10,000 likes on this video, I'll do it. I'm just kidding. Actually, I wouldn't be kidding. If we did get that many, then sure. No, I'll think about that. Like I was thinking about the saxophone now. Like I'm 55% towards my goal now. But I mean, I originally started playing back in October and I was like, I've been doing this for like a pretty solid 6 months now. And it's at the point now where I'm like, I'm practicing and I'm like, I don't totally suck. You know, like I'm enjoying, for the most part, I'm enjoying hearing myself play.
Yeah, well, you're over that hump then.
It seems like it.
That's awesome.
I'm playing more challenging stuff, so I'm messing up quite a bit. But that's like the learning process.
Right.
That's how it goes. But I'm definitely more into like the intermediate / advanced type songs now.
That's gotta be fulfilling.
Oh yeah, it feels good. Especially because like I used to play like at that level way back decades ago when I played music.
Yeah, I think that last podcast you said that you are now where you used to be in terms of skill level,
On the saxophone.
Yeah.
So I was all state for contrabass clarinet. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was pretty good. But that's a weird instrument, so it was sort of a life hack that I got there, you know. But I never got super good on the saxophone because I didn't play it long enough. You know, I played it in the marching band and in the jazz band, but those were for very short periods of time in college. So I always felt like I enjoyed it and I wanted to be able to play it better, but I just never had the time to invest in it back then. My clarinet skills transferred enough for me to be able to play it, but I never really got to practice, you know, for its own practicing.
Do you think that you've 55 hours, do you think you practiced for 55 hours back when you were playing?
Oh yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, okay.
But
it seems like a long time.
But it was like while marching and I was playing like Sousa marches and stuff like that. So it's like, yes, I was playing, but it's very different playing and doing like military precision marching to a John Philip Sousa.
Is it probably a little repetitive?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's so repetitive.
Yeah.
And there's no musicality to it really. Like when you're playing on a, like we would play and do like the pregame or the halftime show for Lane Stadium at Virginia Tech, which is like 63,000 people. So you're just playing as loud as possible at every moment when you're trying to do that type of stuff. So there's not as much musicality to it.
Yeah, that sounds exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
But again, I never got to like truly enjoy and appreciate the saxophone for what it was. So now I'm spending more time doing that. I'm really enjoying it.
I thought of you the other day because I saw an ad for a water bottle that also doubled as a horn. It was like, you know, you could suck out the straw, but then you put your lips on another part and like there's another hollow chamber outside, like in the double wall, and it just was like this I'm like,
oh, that's fun.
I don't know. I think water bottle and horn, I just thought of you because you've always got a water bottle and you have a brass instrument.
Those
I don't
two
know.
Pair well together.
I think it's for like sports games and stuff like that.
Probably. That's fun.
Forgot I made that connection.
That's cool. Yeah. So anyway, still keeping up with it, but I'm sure at some point I can like record myself or whatever. I'm still a little self-conscious about it because I'm like, the point of me doing it is for me.
Yeah.
It's not really to perform, but it's like at some point to like, I don't know, have some motivation, like have something to practice for, you know, that's why they do like recitals and stuff when kids are learning piano and all that kind of thing. Like it's fun to have a goal to shoot for. So
played my toy accordion on the Pencast.
Yes, you did.
So,
yes,
you did. That was certainly worse than anything you've got on your saxophone. So,
okay. Well, I will strongly consider that. Maybe tie it to some kind of milestone, or I'll practice something to where I feel like I could play it. Basically right now I'm playing classical and I'm playing jazz. Those are the two things, and nothing too crazy. It's kind of some of the standards.
Next time you need to go outside to play, just
I have played outside.
It's I know.
Enjoyable.
Yeah. You mentioned that. Yeah. That's why, that's when I thought about the tractor. I'm like, it's right there.
It's right there. It would be hard though, because the sax needs to be like a tenor sax kind of hangs on your side.
Well, you can do
and
like
that's
a,
where I have like the loader control for the,
well, see that's when you
tractor.
Just Captain Morgan it and you don't sit on the tractor. You just kind of like pose.
I could like stand
triumphantly
stand in the bucket of the tractor and play the sax. I've got pallet forks. I could
now you're talking.
Have a little stage.
Now
for myself.
You're talking.
That I could do.
Yes, sir.
It's not recommended by the manufacturer to do that, but
I wouldn't think so. No.
No, but that's okay. It's not recommended to.
Right, I'm being safe, I promise.
I mean, hundreds either, but you know. Yeah, so I'm having fun with that. And then the other thing, again, not giving my back much rest, I made some more pen stands for some guests that we'll have coming soon. These ones were out of maple. I have not done as many maple pen stands.
What do you do normally, walnut?
Walnut's usually my go-to. See, you know.
Listen to me.
But I got some maple as well. It's kind of cool. It's harder to sand, so
when we
don't
were in
like
your,
maple as much.
When we were in your office earlier for a meeting, I was like,
We can smell the finish.
It smelled good. I'm like, did he like spray something? Like it smells. And then I saw those cubes on the desk. I'm like, oh, hello.
It's like a citrusy kind of
smell. It smelled good.
Yeah, I use my go-to finish, wood finish for anybody who cares, is called Odie's Oil. It's like an
oil. You had a t-shirt the other day.
I do have a t-shirt.
I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, it's a t-shirt.
Oh.
I'm a purporter of theirs.
Oh.
I have both bought. So it's funny because like I wanted to get one of their t-shirts because I like the styling of it too.
Yeah, it looked cool.
And then the order that I placed there, I bought some finish and the t-shirt, and then I got a free t-shirt with the order as well. And I was like, oh, well, now I have two t-shirts.
They were the exact same t-shirt?
No, they were different.
Oh, okay. Well,
so that was cool.
Yeah.
But I was like, I could have just not bought it and then had the t-shirt and been perfectly happy.
Yeah, wow.
But no, I just have two and I rotated.
That's cool.
So yeah, I made some pin stands. So yeah, I'll have a picture or something we can show, but yeah, kind of cool. So got to do some woodworking, some outside stuff, some saxophone, some video games. Yeah, just mixing it up with
that sounds awesome.
Leisure activities.
Yeah.
Yeah. That are also productive. So that's my jam. And that's it. That's all I've been up to. So I think we can pretty much wrap it up. Let's do it. All right. I want to thank y'all for watching. I think we achieved our goal of not setting any records on this one.
Oh, darn.
Too bad. Too bad.
We tried so hard.
But y'all already knew that the moment you clicked on this. Want to thank you for watching, though, leaving us feedback, asking us questions. We're having a good time, and we like doing this. So keep it up, and we'll keep doing it, too. Check out GouletPens.com for ink, paper needs, and pens as well. We do have those. And like and subscribe to all of our junk. And then my fun fact, this is not a super deep dive fun fact, but I think I've talked to you about this offline already, but it was about pollen. So we had a big storm here last week, and we thought it was going to like take down trees and stuff.
There
was like a hail warning and all that type of stuff, which we don't get extreme weather here in Virginia very much.
Mm-mm.
So when we do, it's like kind of freaky.
We also had a little tiny earthquake a couple weeks ago.
We did. I felt that.
I was
the epicenter of that earthquake. Was
Shannon felt it upstairs, but I was downstairs playing video games on the love sack. I was completely insulated.
Oh, because you're on the sack.
Yeah.
Wow.
A giant foam blob. I felt nothing.
Wow.
She texted me. I'm like, don't be crazy. There's no freaking earthquake, you loony.
Yeah.
And then like she sent me an article the next morning. She was like, ha! I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. I thought it almost sounded like thunder, but it was like too loud and too long to just be thunder.
I also had my headphones on, so I didn't totally.
Yeah, so you totally missed the experience. Yeah. Rachel and I were just like chilling, and it was at like 10:30 at night too.
Yeah.
So it happened. I thought legitimately like a bomb had gone off because that's what it sounded like.
Oh my God.
Because it sounded like one big explosion happened and we sort of felt it too. And jeez. I was like, that's weird. But we remember we had an earthquake that was pretty high. It was like a 5.8 or something back in 2011. That was like shaking the house kind of thing. Rachel and I very distinctly remember
I was there
that.
With you.
Yeah, that's right. That was freaky.
We were in the garage.
That's right. And
I thought it, to me, it felt like I went outside of your house.
Yeah.
Cause I thought a tank was driving on your road in front. Cause that's me what it sounded like.
Yeah,
it felt like there is a large military convoy driving outside the house. There has to be.
Or I thought like a semi truck had like crashed in our front yard
something,
or like a train had derailed.
Yeah.
Cause that one went on for like a solid 10 or 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was quick. It was just a couple seconds.
That's crazy.
But yeah. And then I was like watching the news. I was like, was there like a terrorist attack in the city or something crazy? Or did some like industrial accident happen? No, it was an earthquake. So I was like, that's a best case scenario for a
very
big,
strange
weird noise.
For Virginia. Like
yes.
Central Virginia, where we are at, generally pretty benign weather.
Yeah. But anyway, that was a tangent from the fun fact. So we had this storm, and what happened was we have all these pine trees and stuff. And we had these little like banana shaped, these like they're like an inch long, maybe 2 centimeters. And it's like they look like little bananas.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the things that are like filled with all the pollen and stuff.
Yeah, so, they're kind of like bean pods or seed pods. Look,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I was like, what are those things? I don't actually know what they are.
You suspected they might be somehow related to pine cones.
Well, I knew that that's where, we have a bunch of pine trees and I see them on the pine trees. They're like in clusters.
Yeah.
And I know that like pollen comes off them because if I hit one or I'm trimming trees or something, you can just see the pollen coming off of those things. But I was like, you know, I don't actually know what's happening with these things. And they were just covering my driveway. So I was like, let me research. Cause I thought they were like baby pine cones that they like grew into what you think of as the brown, like spiky, traditional looking pine cone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is that what's going on there? I was like, I don't actually know. So it turns out that that's actually like the male pine cone.
The pollinator.
So it's the pollinator. Yeah. And then the bigger, spikier ones, those are the ones that get fertilized.
Yeah.
So it's more like the female, you know.
Huh.
So yeah, you actually need both.
Right.
But all the pollen that blows off all the trees and stuff like that, that's just blown and it's pollinating the pine cones.
Hmm.
And then the pine cones do whatever they do to become active seeds. And then when the pine cones fall off, it was kind of cool. I was reading up about this a little bit because there's some stuff online about it. You know, animals will maybe eat it and poop it out, you know, or they'll, you know, scatter it, or, you know, it'll fall into water. They float so they can get carried like really far away. It's actually, nature's pretty cool. Nature's
I actually recently read an article about the most helpful animals to nature.
Yeah.
And elephants are up at the top.
Oh yeah, because
they do all of it. They fertilize. Yeah. They
have terrible digestive tracts, so they don't fully digest a lot of their food. So they just poop a ton. Yeah,
they poop a ton. They eat a ton. Yeah. They the paths they take completely change the landscape. Like
interesting.
Yeah, they're up at the top.
I think the average elephant poops as much as an adult male human weighs every day. That's how much poop they produce.
I'm just picturing like that Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park now.
That's right.
But yeah, it was interesting because Archer was asking about that because we were talking about like, you know, all the roles that, you know, animals perform for nature and pollinators and stuff like that.
Pretty intertwined.
Yeah. So reading about like the most helpful, impactful animals was like just fascinating. Reading about like all the different ways that they actually change their surroundings and protect it in a lot of ways and just keep their habitat moving along is crazy.
We also, you know, we go on these like pontification type walks and stuff as a family, or like we talk about this kind of stuff at dinner. So Ellie's always had this thing about littering. She's like very righteously indignant against people who litter.
Did you tell her about the cigarette fact from last week?
No, I didn't tell her that.
She would not like really that.
She would not stand for that. But no, we have a compost pile, and I think Ellie had like eaten an apple core or something. We were going on a walk. She had the apple core left after eating an apple. And she was like, what do I do with this? And I was like, you can just toss it in the woods. Like it'll decompose or whatever. And then as soon as she did, I was like, oh, not there. You know, and she was
no.
Freaked out. I was like, I'm joking, Ellie. It's the woods. And she was like, well, you have a compost. And then I joked about her littering, right? Because she's always, you know, about that. And she was like, well, you have a compost pile. Isn't that just like sustainable littering? And I thought that was so funny.
Wow.
I was like, that's not wrong.
Wow.
So now I'm going to refer to composting as sustainable littering.
I like that. I think good job,
that's
Ellie.
That's pretty good.
That was witty.
She's clever. She comes up with that kind of stuff, especially if you get her back on her heels. She'll come back at you.
Nice.
And usually put you in your place. So I view it as my job as her dad to like help her sharpen those skills, because the world's a rough place. And I think if she, to use the powers for good, not just like, you know, use it with reckless abandon.
Yeah. But Shannon and I communicate in like 90% trolling sarcasm.
Oh,
so Archer is well versed in just like sharp retorts.
Oh yeah.
So like, I worry sometimes if we've kind of created a monster, because he's a little too sharp for his own good. Mm. I'm like, all right, you need to, I'm actually being serious right now. That was good, but you do need
like,
to go to bed.
Like I'm proud of you, but like,
yeah,
seriously, like
yeah.
You got a little bit of attitude right now. Yeah.
But
that's good. That's part of how you teach, you know?
Yeah. And I do like the wit. I'm like, that is cool. That will serve you well.
It comes in handy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's fun. All right. But that's a fun fact. Yeah. Pine pollen. In pine cones. Look it up. It's cool. Anyway, thanks for watching, everybody. We'll catch you next week. Right on.